And we are live, and if you're looking at me and going, who the hell is that dude with the big beard? Because you follow Andy McCann on YouTube or Facebook. He's co-streaming this episode of my podcast. I'll have him on in just a minute. You'll see it's not a scam. He really is here. He's down there in the green room right now. And we're going to be talking to Andy today about how to become hard to kill, among other things. And I don't know, when you hear the term hard to kill, I'll let Andy speak for himself. But, you know, you kind of think of like being Jason Bourne or like, you know, some sort of like hard to kill, like somebody trying to shoot you or something. That is not what we're talking about today. And if you look at people in the drop dead age group, which is pretty much over 50, so Gen X up to the boomers right now, what kills you is almost never somebody shooting at you. A lot of times it's problems with the cuerpo, man, the body. So we're going to be talking about how to take care of yourself so you can live well into your old age. Notice I didn't say live a long time. There's a lot of people live a long time. And I've known people, and I'm sad to say this, but I've known people that like their last 10 to 15 years of their life, you know, it's miserable. And you could tell that when it's time to go, they're ready to check out. I want to go kicking and screaming at the end. I want to be ready to still be around here. If I make 100, I want to still be that way. So we're going to talk to Andy about things like that today. Before we do, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day before we bring Andy on. Sponsor of the day number one today is JM Bullion. I have been recommending that you stack silver and or gold as part of your wealth assurance program since I started this show all the way back in 2008. And since 2008, my primary recommendation has been 5% of your net wealth in silver and gold as that hedge against all things going crazy and wonky and wrong. And I'd have to say, as my investing advice goes, there's probably three big things I've said over the years. One, stack that precious metal, 5% of your net wealth. Been saying that since 08. If you did that since 08, you're probably pretty happy about it right now. Number two, buy Bitcoin. If you did that from all as long as I've been saying to do it, you're happy about that. And number three, when I first started in 08, I told everybody get out of the frickin' stock market. And if you did that, you're probably happy. But why get your gold and silver from JM Bullion? Well, they're the company that has sponsored the show that you're listening to right now for about 13 years. I can fix problems. I just actually had a rare problem. A rare thing came up with JM Bullion and their fraud system. I was able to get the customer resolution. And they ship free, and they do discounts for MSB members. So since silver and gold are basically one coin is one coin, fungible to each other, and it's all the same as long as you're buying from a reputable dealer like JM Bullion, why would you pay more? Why would you go to the place that doesn't sponsor the show you listen to? Why wouldn't you get your discount? Why wouldn't you get your order shipped free? You see what I'm saying? Check them out today, jambullion.com. Next up today, I got to say, I'm pretty sure KnifeKits.com is the longest standing sponsor on the show at this point. I know that we did sign them in 2009. That's I'm sure. Were they the exact first one? I'm not sure. But I think if they weren't, then they're still the longest sponsor on the show today. That's never been gone, never quit, always sponsored us from day one. They might be the company that sponsored a podcast for longer than anybody else in the history of podcasting, because my God, I don't know many podcasts that have been around as long as we've been with them. So I don't even know if there's an opportunity for it. So check them out. You can learn how to build knives there. You can get kits. They are a company that says what they do and do what they say. Everything you need to do to build those knives. And you can be a master bladesmith and get raw materials. Or you can be, you know, a guy like me that doesn't know how to do all that stuff. You can still get a kit. You can make a really great knife. They also have stuff for like holsters, whether out of leather or kydex, sheaths, leather or kydex. Really cool stuff and great projects you can do with your kids. Really recommend to check them out. With that, I want to bring our special guest on the air, Andy McCann. Caught you trying to take a drink of the coffee.
You did. You jumped right into it. Yes, I will probably be high energy. I've been drinking coffee all day. Got up super early. So I will try hard not to turn this into an infomercial.
Okay.
But damn, guys. This stuff isn't tough. Stack your silver like you stack your health. Buy some stuff every day. Actually, it's not easy to buy silver every day.
Yeah.
Buy your Bitcoin and buy your health or stack your health every day. Just do something.
I would agree with that, man. Let's start off for people that don't know you, because we might have somebody tuning in right now. First time they've ever been a consumer of this podcast. And so they don't know who and what an Andy McCann is. So give us a little bit of your background for the new folks.
Sure. So I'm going to take it down a fun way because I figured out how to stream to my place as well as obviously we're on yours. So way back in 2008, we started this thing, CrossFit Garage, and I got really into this health and fitness. A little bit later, this guy named Bruce Sofci, which has been to your fall workshops a ton of times, he said, "Hey, I heard you say something about storing something. Let me introduce you to a guy." So that's how I found the Survival Podcast. And yeah, I've just been walking down this road of how can we live a better life, more self-reliant without depending on the systems? And man, your podcast spoke to me. Over the years, I've taken the advice. I've got chickens. I had ducks. I hate them. And I've got, stacking silver, gold, Bitcoin. I mean, you name it. It's the advice that comes out of this show is tremendous. A couple of years back, I decided, hey, I've taken so much from you guys. I've never really given anything back. So I stepped up and said, hey, if you need an expert counsel guy for health and fitness, that's my jam. I love it. I'm a degreed engineer, so I tackle everything like a problem, which irritates my family. But I love solving those health problems or the farm problems or whatever. So right now my problem is still how to keep the chickens alive when the hawks have freedom. And I just can't do it. So anyway, I've been doing CrossFit for about 20 years. I love it. You don't have to do it. And I won't judge you for not doing it, except you're going to hell. And I just wish you would do something. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. Some things. This is my, I think, third or fourth time on your show. And I'm going to say the things you've heard before and then twist it with a little bit of things that I've been experimenting with. So my big five things is how you eat, sleep, move, think, and connect. You drill down on that and things go well. And if you, I mean, you said it right. As us guys enter our 50s, we enter the drop dead years. And this is the worst time for my peers. We've got to do something. Otherwise, like the soil lady, her name is escaping me. We retire.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't go well.
Elaine Ingham. Yeah. Dr. Yes. Elaine Ingham just passed away. She was 73, I think. Super nice, kind lady, really wicked smart. And what got me is that, you know, she did, I'm pretty sure now, kind of thinking back, it was November of this last year that she retired and then passed away. Now, she wasn't big on communicating her personal issues. For all we know, she retired because she was ill and in decline and knew that she needed to at that point. But even if it's not her, like I have seen that happen so many times. People, and when the day they retire, Andy, they seem fine.
Yeah.
And it's something weird. Like, I guess taking that sense of purpose out and all the things that they were holding back just kind of are unleashed on them. And I've seen two things make people that look okay decline really fast. And one is losing a spouse. And the other one is leaving their career forever and going into retirement. And then some people do fine after both of those events.
Right. So especially for us guys, we put so much into work that we retire and we get that watch. Well, I know this isn't, you know what I mean? You get a watch.
Well, that's a new watch, right? Maybe they'll start giving us a really good phone.
Yeah. So they're like, thanks for the watch. You don't even care. And they're like, shit's going to fall apart because I'm not there. And it doesn't. Yeah. And we realize, man, I donated all my life to this stuff. So I was smiling inappropriately because I'm reading the comments. And Patrick said, "Oh, I know that guy. He takes pictures of his feet." It's true. It's true. So, I was not smiling because people were dying.
Line, man, we got a freaking only femmes girl here or some shit on our show today.
I'm sure I have an only account for my feet. You guys can go
onlyfeet.com. That, you know, I shouldn't have said that because I bet you that's a thing. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever watched an adult cartoon animated series called Archer, where like he's a secret agent and stuff. There's some episode where one of the other characters says something to Archer and says something about, you know, some kind of really messed up sexual fetish, and he goes, "No, that is not a thing." And the other one responds, "Everything is right. A thing." And he looks it up, he's like, "Oh my god."
Yeah, no, I love it. So kids, if you're listening, go ask your parents how babies are made. Wait. Yeah.
And shall I fetch a rug, sir? That was episode one. Anyway, back to being a little bit serious anyway. You talk about helping people become hard to kill.
Yeah.
I could surmise what you mean by that, but I got you here, so why don't you tell people what you mean by that?
Yeah, so it's a catchphrase. So I love to say, actually, I stole it from somebody else. I don't know who. Everything great is already done. Just repurpose it and make it your own. So our tagline is, we want to help you become harder to kill and look good naked. So okay. Nobody really wants to be
now
all that.
Now we've gone from foot fetishes to he's going to be naked and take pictures of his feet. All right, go ahead.
But so the looking good naked is just says that what I'm doing actually works. So yeah. That's just a really good, easy test. Now, becoming harder to kill. There's a couple things in there. And you know me, I will just talk diarrhea in my mouth out here. I'll talk. So stop me when you want to jump in there. But it comes down to functional life expectancy versus just your life expectancy. So you don't want to live. I don't think many people want to live very long if they either lose their mind or they lose their body. You want them both. So you want your functional life expectancy to really be super close to that last moment. And there's no real way to guarantee that unless you do something with kinetic impact, right? But it's, you want to do those things that make the journey end well, not retire and die. So a thing we'll talk about is capability versus aesthetics. Yes, it is nice to look good naked. So you could just diet your way into looking good, or go the other way and lift like crazy and be like a next gen Arnold Schwarzenegger. But both of those types have issues. They're not actually healthy. They just look good. So, you know, be a trophy husband, be a trophy wife. I don't know. I'd rather live well into it. So that's kind of the thing is, how can we help you not just act like you have fitness, but actually have fitness? And yeah, so I chose CrossFit because, man, I've been doing fitness for a very long time, and this is the biggest hack to health and fitness that I have ever found. Now, is it for everybody? No, nothing is. And am I schlepping it that you should go do it as a big infomercial for CrossFit? No, I don't care what you do. It's just so when you're looking to solve the problem, what's the big problem? And for me, it was time. So I don't want to go to the gym and lift for 5 hours using the hypertrophy method. I just don't have 5 hours to give. I don't want to get on a bike and go ride for 3 hours. Or like, what do they say with the triathlon? If you're not on your second marriage, you're not trying. So you're not training hard enough.
Yeah.
That's not it. So my big thing was time. I lack time. How do I do it? How do I cram it together?
I mean, let's see, what do I do for 5 straight hours? Sometimes I work because I have to. I fish that long, I hunt that long, and I sleep that long. Right? That's about as much as I can focus 5 hours on. Those things right there. That's it.
Yeah, right. I mean,
I don't want to be in a gym for 5 hours. I guess if I had a job there, it'd be different. But that's not what we're talking about.
Well, and so the other side of it then becomes, like, what do you want to do for fun? So I admit, I do enjoy the chickens. It's a little bit of work, but they, you know, best place to store your eggs is in the cloaca. So I store them there and they drop them every day.
Yeah.
But to get out there and feed them, which you have to do every once in a while, I need to take a 50-pound bag of scratch feed or whatever I've got out there to keep them around. And how do I take it out there? Well, I clean it up to my waistline and then I jerk it up to my shoulder and I walk it out. So practical methods, I do clean and jerks at the gym. Am I doing super amounts of weight? No, I lie to people because they don't know that the rubber weights are bigger and just don't weigh as much. So I know some of y'all look at that and go, dang, he's lifting like 500 pounds. It's just not true. So
250.
Yeah. Strength is my weakness. I am not a strong guy. I can just keep working. So I'm the guy, the ant. I'm the ant. Ants actually lift a lot. You know what I mean? I just don't have strength.
I wanted to talk to you about this because we're going to kind of go through all these different areas of fitness. And
yeah,
I think movement is incredibly important. I think doing things that you're going to want to do in the future now is important. You were the first one I ever heard put it this way, but you said something effective. If you stop trying to do something as you're aging, especially, your body's like, well, I guess we don't need to do that anymore. So I'm not going to keep the ability to do that thing. So people that stay sitting down all the time, you know, they end up having a hard time even walking because they don't walk enough. But when it comes to like the pure burn it hardcore working out things like CrossFit, I think that's a great thing for some people. I'm glad that you're not one of like, if you're not doing it, bro, you're wrong. Like, those people are crazy.
Yeah.
They're also always the ones that are on like their 57th injury and their fourth divorce.
Right.
But when I look at like traditional life of a human species, I don't know that that is the standard operating procedure for humans as a species, you know, specifically working out like that. I've heard people talk about like, I do the caveman workout, man, we push boulders. And I'm like, why the fuck would a caveman push a boulder around all day? Like there's no call for that. Hunter-gatherer societies actually spent an awful lot of time laying down in front of fires and telling stories, but they eat real food and they, you know, they go get their food. They do a lot of walking, a lot of slow running. They do a lot of bending, twisting, maneuvering. And then I think humans were naturally competitive. So even in the most primitive societies that are still what they were hundreds or thousands of years ago, the few untouched ones, whenever we, you know, as long as they're not the ones that will kill you for showing up, like the ones on that one island in the Pacific, where they'll let people come in and document it, there's always some level of sporting type shit going on, even with those societies, right? Right. It's not, you know, two guys, you know, like putting stones on a tree or something, but there'll be some sort of competition. Like it's just something humans seem to do is physically compete with one another.
Right.
So to me, it seems a very traditional way that people basically train their capabilities and maintain their capabilities.
Right. And so, yes to that. That is right. And let me back up to that first statement of you don't have to do it anyone's way. The best program that works is the one that you'll do. So if like I know you like the heavy bag, if you'll do that, then man, that is do it. But if we back off and we stop and we wonder, that's weird. I don't know why I can't sit on a normal toilet and why when I go to the nursing home, they're so much higher because this is so convenient. Yeah, because we don't stand up and sit down. You know, an easy way to test yourself, we did this at your fall workshop. Plant your feet from a sitting position and try to stand up. If you can't, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Another easy one, if you look at your shoelaces and you tie them on the inside because you can't actually get to the top of your shoe anymore, you know, the Dunlop disease, your belly Dunlopped over your belt, whatever. So it's just do. Your body wants to adapt to survive, not to thrive. It wants to be super efficient. And you can do things to your body. You can pollute the hell out of it, drugs, smoke, whatever, and your body will figure out a way to detox out of that. It'll keep going. Now you're hampering it, but your body will adapt to it. It's just like sitting at a keyboard, mousing and typing, your tendons are going to adapt to that. So push just a little bit.
So you've been deep down the carnivore space. Let's move into the food side of things.
Sure.
Because I actually think of the two things, both are important, exercise and diet. Diet may be the more important one. I've especially when I was younger and I'd go to the gym and all, I knew guys that were, you know, in their early 20s and like their diet was ass, but they worked out all the time. And they're like, man, I can eat whatever I want because I work out every day. I'm like, no, bro, you can eat whatever you want because you're 21. When you're 21, you can do all kinds of stupid shit and your body just adapts. I'm like, you know, if you're eating like that when you're 31, even if you're here, you're going to have problems and you're going to start putting weight on you. You're going to start having issues with maintaining muscle mass. Carnivore to me is one of like, it's not the easy button from a discipline standpoint for some people, but it's the easy button from it'll work and it's all you have to do.
Right.
But what's your experience been? You've been doing this for years now, like hardcore. That's all you do.
Yeah. So let me paint a really disgusting picture. You do not want to do what I do. I really think something is broken inside of me that I can eat this way. Okay. So the quick picture, you spoke of, hey, you should try this carnivore thing. Here's a video series. Go through it. I'm like, I don't know. That sounds kind of weird. I'm not sure I'm going to do that. But it came up in my family. My son, Evan, goes off to college. He either eats something or does something. I don't know. But he came home. He went to school at 170, and he came home, and the lowest weight he got to was 117. I was like, buddy, you're going to die unless we do something different. My family is very granola and crunchy. I don't even have a primary doctor. None of my kids have had those things that they try to give you when you're born. I don't know if I can say it out loud without somebody putting us in jail. We don't do any of that. Now, I have friends that are doctors and medical professionals. I think that's great. Do it. We just choose to abstain. Anyway, We go to the doctor. They're like, hey, you've got a Crohn's diagnosis. We want to cut your colon out and hit you with some medicine. And he's like, hey, Dad, remember that carnivore thing? Well, I found the lion diet. It's like more restrictive. Anyway, he does this for about 4 months. He's like, I feel different. We keep doing it for like a year. We get a little less strict. He's back at college at 170 pounds. Never did any drugs, never did anything. Am I a doctor? No. Am I telling you this will cure you? No, I am telling you I visually saw with my own eyes my son do a thing that I thought would be impossible. I told him, hey, it's a lonely journey. I'll do it with you. So I got on carnivore. So it's been about 2 years that I've been eating pretty strict. This is disgusting, but I'm going to tell you what I eat. Should you do this? Absolutely not. Is it awesome? Totally. For breakfast, 6 eggs. Usually they're over easy. For lunch, two types of steak. So usually I get like picanha or a strip or something. So it's like, you know, uncooked, it's about 1.5 pounds. For dinner is a pound of ground beef with about a thimble or spoolfuls of goat cheese. Coffee, which I've got right here.
Yep.
A lot of salt and water. That's all I eat. I've been eating that for about 2 years. I'm not dead. I've been to the doctor. We're going to talk about some of that in a second. Been to the doctor. They've done the blood work. Man, it is the easiest thing I have ever seen. As long as you can get over the fact that you're eating meat all the time, which I love, it's a complete no-brainer. I have my numbers are, well, I'll talk about LDL in a second. But, yeah, so would I recommend it? Man, I don't know. It is tough. But, damn, does it work for me and my son? Okay. So the things that I would tell you, I would probably hire a nutritionist of some sort to help you go down the road because it's a weird road. So like at our gym, we have coaches that do nutrition. Coach Jennifer has Inked Barbell. You can contact me. I will send her you. Josiah and Coach Matt both do nutrition. They can help you. You don't want me because I'm going to say stop eating like a death row inmate. And, you know, I'm just too hard on people when they won't do the thing that they're supposed to do. But the coaches I have are super cool. I am not. A thing that you're going to have to realize, and I think you said, I know you said this in your videos, your LDL is going to go up.
Yeah.
But what the doctor says isn't exactly what they mean. They just say it for us idiots because we're not going to understand or pay attention. And they say it for the lowest common denominator in America, which we don't have to be.
Yeah. What would happen to somebody if their cholesterol level went to zero?
You would be dead. Actually, it happens all the time.
Yeah,
it's dead people. Yeah.
You'd die. Well, if you could do it instantly, literally everything that holds your body together would give up and you would fall apart into a puddle of goo.
Right. Well, so this is the thing that they don't tell you. They're like, oh, LDL is bad. LDL is not bad. If you got rid of all your LDL, you would be dead.
Yeah.
So LDL, and I don't mean to lecture you guys, but I was talking to Jesse, the your cryptocurrency Bitcoin concierge guy. So Jesse and I were talking. And he's like, tell me the LDL thing again. I'm like, dog, we have talked about this. I got to say it again. So I did. So I love Jesse. So here's the story on LDL. LDL cleans up your system. So without it, you'd have a very dirty system. The problem is it goes rancid. It oxidizes. So you want, I don't even know what this means, but you want large, buoyant LDL, whatever that means, to clean out your system. HDL goes and cleans up LDL. Yeah, I know. I'm not giving you all the details, but that's roughly what it's doing. LDL is also the transport for fat as an energy system. So I eat like one carb a day because I think there's some carbs inside of goat cheese, right? So fat is my transport system or my energy system. The transport system is LDL. So my LDL, I went and actually found it. It's all in ChatGPT. I was like, hey, chat, you know we've talked. Tell me again what my LDL is and why is it so high and is it bad? So it's like, oh, Andy, you're such an idiot. Here's your LDL. So I went back and looked. So in 2023, before Evan and I got on carnivore, my LDL was 140.
Okay.
Back in September of 2025, I remeasured it. It was 213. And that's not a problem. You want to ask them to give you the advanced lipid panel. And what they're going to do is actually put your cholesterol or your blood under a microscope and look at your LDL and see if it's large and buoyant. If it is, then it's a false positive. It's a, oh, you don't really have what we thought you have. But if you're the standard American person, you probably do.
But if you don't do that, they will totally put that person on medication like statins and shit just because that number is higher.
It's true. And so my buddy Cam, who he's a good case study in how you can fix yourself if you do this late. But he went and got this, and they're like, I got to go on a statin, right? And I was like, ask them for the advanced lipid panel. And he said, and mine also said this, the person I use across the street, it's a kind of a concierge business. Anyway, they're like, I can't even order, nor do I know exactly what is the advanced lipid panel. So I'm not saying run from those guys. I'm just saying get them educated. Have them look it up because they may not know. So they're just doing the standard American thing, which is, oh, you have high cholesterol. I need to give you medicine because you're too dumb to fix your diet.
Yeah, and I think there is a lot of these doctors. It's not that they're malicious. They just don't know.
Right.
They just don't know the stuff we're talking about, and they have no real impetus to learn. They feel like, hey, and I can understand why they feel this way. Bro, I went 4 years of college. I went 4 years of med, right? Then I did an internship. Then I did 4 to 5 years of residency. Then I'm board certified as a physician. If this stuff was important to health, somebody along the way would have told me that.
Right. No, that's for sure.
The answer to that is, I'm sorry, doctor. No, they wouldn't have.
Right. Well, and also, you're dealing with some edge cases. Not many people eat as – I mean, okay, let me back this up on edge cases. The lady across the street, super cool. I love her. She's really good, and she's like, hey, I'm willing to talk to you and understand this. But she said, your A1C is 5.8. That makes you pre-diabetic. And, of course, like a dumbass, I said, well, isn't everybody pre-diabetic? And I said – she's like, so do you actually – cheat at all? Do you eat anything like that? Because my first thing is stop eating that. And I'm like, no, I don't. She's like, well, then I don't even know what it's measuring. I'm like, it's your liver's natural ability to produce its own glucose. Because without glucose, you don't live. You have to have some, right? Mm-hmm. So we're edge cases. The vast majority of the people, like if they say, it's like the memes they have online, like the line for just give me Ozempic or a GLP-1 is long, but the line for, hey, I'm going to go to the gym every day is super short.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the other thing is we have to be careful with these tests. I'm going to give blood pressure as an example, right? That's something everybody is familiar with. It's a very important thing. You don't want to have super high blood pressure. Okay. I get that. But the people that fund all the studies are the ones that sell all the drugs. And when you go on blood pressure medication, unless you do something like we're talking about today, that just means you're going to take blood pressure medication for the rest of your life, whatever that may be. So you're a lifelong customer now. That's a good thing if I am selling the drugs.
Right.
Do you know, I don't know if you say you don't, if you don't, what do you think was the threshold where they said, we need to medicate blood pressure if it's above these numbers in 1975?
Wow. I would say that the number weirdly corresponded to the profit ratio that the companies needed to hit their numbers in 1976.
Yeah, it was 165 over 95.
Dang.
That was where they started medicating blood pressure in 1975, 165 over 95. If you were like 150 over 85, you're good. Don't worry about it.
So then there's money.
I have not found a good reason other than we figured out it's important that it be lower. Like, I've not seen anything that actually proves that, because now if a person is like 130 over like 80, right, they'll say, you know, we should at least put you on a beta blocker or, you know, something like that. And like, bro, first of all, doctors do that shit and they don't understand something called white coat hypertension. That's what Ken Berry, like most people actually are kind of on edge.
Right, right.
When they go to the doctor. I know if I'm in a doctor's office, my blood pressure is going to be about 15 points higher than if I just randomly at any point during the day go take my, we have a really good high-end blood pressure cuff, and it'll be 15 points higher when I'm in the doctor's office. Yeah. And when you tell the doctor that, you know, they say, I've been doing this a very long time, and if you were my mother, I would shut the fuck up. I'm sorry. Like, that's just like, you're not listening to what your customer is telling you.
Right. And well, I think this particular reason is why some doctors are moving to this concierge service. We got a great guy here locally, Dr. Skardasis, and the insurance wants him to do a thing. And he's like, that's just not how it should be. I should listen and pay attention more and sit and stand. And I mean, dude, to the malpractice insurance alone to be a doctor has got to be insane. Not I mean, in addition to all of the loans they have out on equipment and stuff. So in any business, unfortunately, without profit, there is no passion. You have to make some money. And so they go down these roads, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it's, so they're trained that. And also you and I are talking edge cases. I think when most people have high cholesterol with high LDL, they're probably in trouble. It's just these edge cases that, I mean, who wants to deal with this guy right here? Nobody. They're like, yeah, you got so much energy and you're so peppy, but your veins stick out and you have high cholesterol. You make no sense. Could you just go away? I'm like,
yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think it is starting to change, though. More and more doctors are starting to wake up, but I think that's why they're moving to like the concierge model or the direct primary care models and things like that, because, and this is something I learned from Ken. Dr. Ken Berry, for those that are not familiar
with Ken Berry,
is that the doctor operating in the system really can't do what needs to be done. The entire system is predicated and set up that most doctors are not paid by the patient. They're paid by the insurance company. So the insurance company sets the term. And for some reason, the more medication you have the customer on, the more the insurance company pays you, even though they're the ones supposedly paying for the medication. It's almost like there's a whole bunch of grab ass going on and people have their hands down each other's shorts behind the scenes or something.
Right. Well, in addition to that, just like you were saying, hey, I go to the doctor to get my blood pressure checked, but I'm at the doctor's office, so I'm elevated, right? So not every time come on, I'm married and I say the wrong words all the time. It's not what I mean, but that's what I'm saying. So I had one of your folks email in. It was about I did some testing and it seems really far off. I'm doing carnivore, but what was high? My triglycerides or something was high. So the numbers looked weird. Yeah. And so when I got to emailing with him, I was like, hey, when you said you did it fasted, tell me what you think fasted means. He's like, well, I drank coffee with stuff in it and some milk and some this. I'm like, okay.
That's not fasted.
So, that's not like you've added stuff. They're like, really? I'm like, yeah. And did you work out the day before? And I'm like, well, I went on a lot. I'm like, okay, so it's going to change your numbers. So this is, you had mentioned continuous glucose monitors. So I know we've linked them before in the show, but Amazon's got those for you and you can measure more similarly time of day as well as what you've been doing habitually to make the numbers give you a better picture. I'd rather your number be consistent than accurate. We'll work on accuracy later, but if you're all over the map, then nothing's great. But if you can say every day I measure it and I can see that I'm at whatever we're measuring, 100, I'm like, okay, great. It's 100 every time. What if I now change it, right? So at least I had it consistent. Maybe I'm not doing it correctly yet, but at least I'm getting some sort of baseline to understand. And that's the big thing is most of us don't know. And like somebody in the comments just said, hey, I just checked ChatGPT and it sounds like he might be onto something. I'm like, yeah, ChatGPT will agree. So put yourself in there and let it tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. For someone who's eating meat heavier keto, how should they interpret doctors and their immediate recommendations, especially statins?
Yeah. So first, again, Jack and I are not doctors.
I don't even play one.
Yeah. I didn't even sleep at a Holiday Inn Express. I got nothing on it. Right. you should. Let me back this up. Probably the easiest thing you can do, and you harp on this all the time, use AI. Go on chat or whichever one you're using and just say, hey, I'm about to see the doctor on this sort of things. Talk to me like a fifth grader and then talk to me as if I'm a college grad. And let's give me some questions that I can actually utilize when talking to the doctor. So I think that's wise. Get a little bit of education. Also, don't go in with confrontation on your mind. It's a doctor. They want to help. I mean, I truly believe the glass is half full. I don't live on the glass is half empty. It's a mindset thing. The world is a helpful place, not a hostile place. So go in there with peace. But ask them, hey, why statin? Could I try something else? Are we doing this because the average person won't? So if I'm assuming that if you're doing carnivore or keto or one of those, then you're relatively regimented because you kind of have to be. So if you can be regimented into your food, I would mention that to them and say, I could probably change some things with habit than just taking a pill, because most people just want the pill. So I would go in there and say, hey, what about standard of care versus like optimal care? What would be better? Could I do on my own? Right.
Yeah.
Again, go back to the LDL and say, hey, can we take a look at the actual size of the LDL? Like, is it actually all bad, or am I creating a better system for my body to live in? So you had said something before, I think it was between you and Ken Berry, like you can eat everything you want on carnivore. And you said, no, he said, yeah. You're like, if you eat too much, you will gain weight.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, it's like, you need to tell them, like, log your food for 2 weeks, let them see, because I eat about 4,000 calories a day. I know I need to increase the fat content as I see myself dropping on the scale. So there is some sort of ratios that your body is going to enjoy, and it's going to be different than mine. It's like, yep, when they started giving people, right, blood transfusions. They're like, hey, this works sometimes, but then people die most of the time. Why is it? Oh, there's blood types.
It has to match.
Yeah.
Yeah. You played a game with a 1-20% chance of winning, and every once in a while you won. That's
is it
how
1-20? Dang.
You know? Yeah. I also, you know, with the whole, like, Ken's thing about you can eat, the calories don't matter and all.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
You can only, but for some people, they may agree with him because, well, I did it. And he's right.
Right.
I ate as much as I, well, that's how much you can eat. I really challenge people, and if you're an MSB member in my program, you can get this book for free in a PDF. It's called The Glycation Factor by Dr. Greg Ellis. And he was told this long, long before any of us were talking about it. He was a lineman playing college football back in the 70s. And so you tell a guy like that they can have all the steak they want, guess what they're fixing to do? They're fixing to eat some steak.
That's it.
You're throwing up a number like 4,000 calories. This bro was throwing down about 9,500 calories. And all of a sudden he did start to, and all he was eating is steak and water. That was it.
Yeah.
And eggs. That was it. He ate some eggs too. And he started to put all his weight on. And, you know, his trainer said, bro, I didn't think you'd actually eat that much. Like, no one eats. So the reason that formula works for probably 75% of people to try it is, it is satiating.
Right.
And so because it's satiating, they reach a point where they stop eating. There are people that if you tell them lion diet, they're like, let me show you what a fucking lion can do.
Right.
And then what are you eating? If you're just eating ribeyes and sirloins and stuff, that's one thing. And it's not a processed thing, even though technically this is processed. But if the person's eating things like sausages and all, what I found is certain foods like that, they're, you know, it's processed. It's fucking meat and fat and salt and herbs.
Right.
There's not any sugar in it. There's not any, you know, I made it myself. I can still eat more. And so sometimes just changing the form of the food allows a person to eat more. Because I know when I sit down with a ribeye, I can pound through about a pound of ribeye, but I am fucking done.
Yeah.
I mean, I am done when I eat that. Like, what are you going to eat for dinner? If I ate that for lunch, I'm like, that's it. I'm done. Right. I'm finished for the day.
So that's a funny one. Most people say what you're saying, that, hey, when I do carnivore and I eat, I am so full. I can eat one meal a day.
Yeah.
Dog, man, I wake up hungry. And if I don't make those eggs right away, I mean, the dogs start running because they're like, he's getting mean. And I'm not a mean guy. I get hangry, man. I don't know what it is. I need to eat. Now, my son on the other side, he does 2 meals a day and he's doing just fine on this carnivore. Now, we're the only idiots to do this. I think my other kids play around with it, but they're like, eh. A negative to this whole thing on the carnivore side that nobody really ever talks about is you get unused to eating the other things. So
yeah.
I will have an avocado every now and then, or a sweet potato every now and then, and my stomach is wrecked. I get gassy. I get bad. It just doesn't work. I've had garlic. We go to the Brazilian steakhouse, and I've tried their garlic lamb, and that garlic sits on me for like 5 days and I just don't feel right.
Yeah. And I think that's another thing too. Like, I think keto works perfectly well. That's my life. I am not, just for people out there that don't know me or don't know this about me, I am not carnivore. I'm not going to say there might not be like a week where I'm like, I'm going to do carnivore for a week, because that does happen. But mostly I eat a keto diet. I'm keeping my carbs down below 20 carbs a meal, usually no more than 2 meals a day.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's only 1 meal a day. And when I say up to 20, I'm not saying I do that every day. I'm saying that's like a hard limit that I will not exceed. You know, vacations and things aside, when I go on a cruise ship, I might eat some cheesecake or whatever. But other than that, I stick that with that. And I think that, you know, Andy would agree with this, like something regimented about your diet, something that puts it into a level of control is better than not. Like everybody just puts whatever comes in their hand in their face. And this is another problem with the labs, right? So the labs, they'll do like, all the ones that are designed to put you on medication, they keep lowering the threshold. But then all the ones that that are like, you know, what's your vitamin D level? What's your magnesium levels? All those types of labs, they do the whole, well, you know, it's normal. What's normal? Normal is the person that shoves everything to get in their hand in their face. So normal is all the people in line at the state fair and their median average, right? That's normal. So they're not even dialing in for optimum that way. But I just want to say on the diet thing, like, you don't have to do what Andy's doing. You don't have to do what I'm doing. I'm going to tell you that the vast majority of people out there that you know, if you say to yourself, honestly, if I'm not going to bullshit myself, and please don't bullshit yourself, that's the worst person you can bullshit. I do need to be in better shape. Most people that are doing like a standard American diet today, if they would limit their food to real whole foods, Just start there. Real whole foods, no seed oils, less than 100 total carbs a day. So not playing the net carb game when you're that high up, but less than 100 total carbs a day. And it, including things like, if you're going to eat bread, then it better be sourdough that you made and shit like that, right? If they would do that alone, they're like, a lot of those people, all their labs will come right in the line with, if not what a normal doctor would find to be optimum, an educated doctor would find to be optimum.
Well, and I think yes to that. And hear the message. It's not complicated. It's just not easy. Your tongue is an asshole. It wants you to eat the things that it wants you to eat. And there's things inside of you saying, please give me more sugar. I would say start simple. The simple thing is stop drinking sugar, because you can drink more sugar than you can eat. Just eat the sugar. That's fine. Even if you eat it raw, you just stop drinking sugar. And then if possible, if it has a drive-through window, don't eat there. I'm not saying don't have a chicken, egg, and cheese biscuit. I'm just saying make it yourself.
Make it yourself. Yeah. Yeah, and this is an interesting comment here from Hey Alabama. He says, I do better on keto or eating like my great-grandparents did, which was probably keto before there was keto. I will tell you guys, first of all, keto goes back to the early 1900s, like 19-teens, and it was originally developed as a treatment for autism.
Ooh.
And it worked. I'm just saying. Now, not the kind of autism that's like the super severe, closed up in yourself, but even if you could get that person, because they're very routine, but like the moderate autism level type thing, it was highly effective, that. And it was also very effective for epileptic seizures, which I find is, so it is old. But when I think about what my grandparents say, if you said, were they keto? I'm like, well, they were fucking Ukrainian, so no.
Right.
But wait a minute. Let's look at the whole year, right? So Ukrainians are like a lot of common foods with the Poles, right? So like pierogies, which is like a pasta thing with cheese and potato inside it. That is not keto. But do you think we were eating pierogies in June? No. Pierogies were a midwinter when it's really fucking cold and you're going hunting every day and like you're trying to stay warm. Or we used to have this other thing called machanka, which was basically cheese soup. And this part is actually kind of keto, right? It's cheese and milk to thin it, melted down, but then clarified butter with onions. You put that on top. The non-keto part is where you take the big giant thing of rye bread, you cut it into sticks, and you dip it in the cheese, right? But again, were we eating that in May, June, July, August? No. And when I think about, well, what were we eating? We were eating meat and fish. and vegetables and foraged fruits and vegetables. That's what we were eating. And it wasn't because we're like, oh, it's time to do that. We just did. I don't even know how to explain it because we're so disconnected from that world I grew up in at this point. Like, we hunt, we fish, we garden. So this is the supply arc of the food.
Right.
So we went through these cycles. So there was probably times we went months being keto as shit without even a second thought about if that's what we were doing. Because if you go back to that period of time before inflation really kicked every bit of balls out from under people and meat was less expensive, and you give a kid and you said, hey, do you want a baked potato or do you want a ribeye? Well, yeah, frickin' kid ate the frickin' ribeye, right? Like, right. Yeah, I want a steak, right? Like, we saw potatoes and things like that and breads as when you didn't have enough food, how you fed people when you were poor or when supplies were scarce. So it created this natural cycling that I think we're now, it's like, since everybody's poor all the time and everything's expensive all the time and people have no real connection to unless they're like people in our audience do, but most people don't grow any of their own food. They don't forage any of their own food. They don't hunt. They don't fish. They don't do any of that shit. So the steak is always $12 a pound. So right. We're always defaulting to Top Ramen and freaking Ho-Hos. And I think that has completely corrupted nutrition to where even what they say is a good diet, they full well know nobody fucking eats that way.
Right.
Nobody eats 11 servings of actual whole grains a day. No one does that. Like, your ding dong does not count as that thing, right? Your Ho-Ho does not go in that classification.
There's a company here in Woodstock called the Bread Beckers. Their thing is we supply raw grain that you can put through a mill and crack it and grind it, whatever, and then make your own bread. We did that for a long time. And man, eating the real thing, not Wonder Bread, so different to the insides. I mean, it's just, I love technology, man. I got some AI stories I need to make sure I tell you, but technology is awesome. But us humans do stupid stuff. Like, I had Navy buddies that on ship would warm up by standing in front of the microwave dish. I mean, that's just dumb. So we do stupid stuff with technology. Don't do that. So, I don't know, get a little closer to where your food was made. This is why I love your stuff. Hey, grow something. Just participate somewhat. Like, do you even know where an egg comes from? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I even have some family members that they don't get quite to the joke where, you know, it's like you eat the eggs that come out of the chicken's butt. But they kind of have this whole off-putting thing about it where, like, it's a fresh egg. Like, where do you think your eggs – I mean, I know my eggs are better, but where do you think your eggs come from? They, too, originate from the ass of a chicken. Like, there's no other way to get an egg. Like, that's where an egg comes from. It comes from a chicken. But I do feel that people have gotten into this mindset that, like, there's some kind of like cleansing thing about, or it makes it safe that it came from a store in a box.
Right.
Right. And it's a psychological thing. I was listening to a guy that had been homeless one time talk about how the stigma of eating food out of the trash. He's like, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it was a good way to live. All I'm saying is if somebody had a box with a half a sandwich in it and you would have eaten it if he handed it to you. And he's like, just think that way. That's what would have happened. Now you see the same guy with the same sandwich in the same box, and he puts it in the garbage, but it's at the top. It touches nothing else. Nothing has changed. Our mind immediately goes, but that's from the trash.
Yeah.
Right? And that's probably a good self-defense mechanism because God knows what else is in there.
Well,
but he was dead on in this. But if you flip it around to people think there's some sort of like just like food becomes bad the second it becomes trash.
Right.
It becomes okay the second they put it in a package.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like people think that way.
Well, we get used to that. We get used to what we've been presented. As an example, I was doing a video on the chickens, and someone was like, hey, what's all the brown stuff all over the chicken eggs? I'm like, well, it's poop. What? It's the same whole dog. And they're like, what? It's just people don't know. They don't know what they don't know. So, yeah.
Yeah. You've been playing around with something called EBO.
Oh, yeah.
EBOO, which is Extracorporeal blood oxygenation and ozonation. What the fuck is that? And why would you consider it?
So my recommendation, if any of you guys ever heard of EBU, I'm going to say, it's a big nothing burger, but unless. So again, going to Evan, I'm trying a lot of stuff to see what I can do ahead of him, because one data point's no good. At least two data points, you make a line, right? So I was like, okay, there's this thing called EBU. What they do is they take your blood out of one arm, run it through a contraption of things, and then put it back in the other arm. And so the answer is yes, your body does all of this stuff. So do you need to do it? The only thing that EBU does is it puts some UV light over your blood cells. Now, weirdly, there's a problem. Some blood doesn't like UV light, which I guess means vampires are real. So make sure you don't have this one condition, because your blood will all explode and it won't go back in right. But so basically, they take it out. They have
them, you can't gloss over that. What?
Well, yeah, so
what is this,
there's
condition
I
did not have if I do this thing? I don't want my blood to explode.
Yeah, so there's a condition which apparently comes out of the Mediterranean, which I'm 50% Italian, so I told the lady that. She's like, McCann, you're good. I'm like, no, my mom's Christina Marabella, come on.
Yeah.
So she's like, oh, snap, well, do you want to keep doing this or do you want to wait? I'm like, I just watch it, I guess. But anyway, there's this thing where your red blood cell walls will be impacted negatively, basically get loose and then burst. And so basically it's kind of like a rhabdomyolysis. Basically you've got too much blood blowing up all over the place and it just won't do what it's supposed to do. You'll have red blood, but it'll be like syrup and not what it's supposed to be. So anyway,
very brown urine. That's not good.
Yeah. So this, what they do is they take your blood and they put it across a mechanical filter. So it's pulling stuff out, some stuff by size. And then they blow oxygen or ozone over it. So ozone, like if you think of like a wastewater treatment facility, first thing they do is capture the big stuff, and then they blow ozone across the water so that it purifies it even more. So ozone is O3. O3 is very unstable. It wants to become O2 and something else. So the extra oxygen jumps onto something else. Yeah, that's my nerd from Georgia Tech coming out there. So they blow ozone across it, and then they put it through various pulses of UV light, which is something you can't do. You can't bleed yourself, let the sun hit it, and then put it back in. Your blood just doesn't go back in very well. So the answer is, should you do it? I'm going to say no. They had a 2-liter bottle with stuff in it, and it looked like high fructose corn syrup. It had that viscosity and that coloring. It was kind of clear, but not really. And I don't know. For me, it didn't really do anything. I think for someone like Evan, if you have a detoxing problem, like you do the normal things, whatever those things are, and it doesn't really work, well, it could be that you need help. And so this would give you an external source, kind of like a dialysis machine, I guess, doing the kidneys job. It would do an extra thing to help you. I will tell you some funny stories on it, though. So she's like, I forgot her name, Kennedy. Kennedy said, hey, look, you're not a normal candidate for this. First thing is, we need to open up your veins a bit bigger so that we can get the needle in. I'm like, hey, could you just use a bigger gauge? And she's like, what?
Yeah.
You'd be willing for a bigger needle? I'm like, yeah, if you got a bigger needle, can we just do that? And she's like, I guess. And she's looking at me like, you're such an idiot.
Yeah.
So we did. We did a bigger needle. It was fine. But she said, try to take this, it's that pill, the nitrous oxide. It's supposed to
blood some.
Yeah. And so I did. And I laid on the floor, called my wife. I said, hey, I may be dying. I'm on the floor with my feet in my chair. I'm about to black out.
Yeah.
Come over here when you can. If I'm dead, I'm sorry. I love you. And she and her, my son ran over and they're like, you're not dead. I'm like, dude, I feel messed up. So moral of the story is,
don't do that.
Carnivore people don't react the same way to the same method. So she's like, normal person needs the pill. Also, the normal person crashes with their glucose. So they're like, I want you to drink this orange sugary thing. I'm like, I don't even drink orange sugary stuff on my own. So no.
Yeah.
So my glucose went from something like, I'm making these numbers up because I don't remember. Yeah. But it went from like 130 to 120, whereas most people drop from 130 down to like 80 and they have to give them shots of things. She's like, wow, that is really cool that nothing happened. So anyway, would I do it? I don't know. I'd probably go for a continuous glucose monitor first. And a at-home blood pressure kit and do that sort of stuff. it's a neat thing, but I mean, if you want $1,000 to just go blow, sure. Or if you've got a kid with a thing, man, I mean, wouldn't you do anything for your child? So maybe. I've experimented with a lot of stuff. That one, a little bit weird, but eh.
Have you done anything with like hydrotherapy, thermal therapy, you know, hot, cold, hot type situations, anything like that? Because I found that not only to be effective, like historically very well tracked. Like there isn't a culture that, you know, rises to the level, some level of what you'd call civilization,
right,
that doesn't have some form of like sweat lodges, hot houses, saunas. Like that's a huge thing in Scandinavia is the saunas.
Right.
You know, and you think about like the reason they did it is like to get clean, because taking a bath when it's 5 degrees right, below zero is not nice. And that's a warm day in their winter. But, you know, they do the thing like in Scandinavia, they'll do the thing too. They take like the pine branches and kind of whip their backs, and people think that's crazy. Well, what they're doing is stimulating circulation. And they're detoxing. So if you, because that's not on the notes I have, but just as we're talking, it kind of came up because it is something that I find to be really valuable.
And I'm with you on that. So the one caveat for me personally is once we invented hot water that we could bring to anywhere, I never went back. So this guy right here does not do cold water. So my hands, I think it's Raynaud's disease or something. This pinky or a ring finger turns deathly white, like it's from a corpse. And my fingers and toes just don't do well, so no cold plunging for me. But hot plunging, I'm all in, man. Let's do it. I've got guys at the gym who've built their own saunas out of those lights we use for chickens, the heat lamps. They just have a crap ton of them. I'm like, man, you're going to blow your circuits. But I love it. I think it's a great idea. It doesn't fit into my normal habitual patterns.
Yeah.
So I don't. Instead, I do the other sort of things like, hey, what if I got up and looked at the sun with my eyes shut, you know, got some, you know, so I do some of the other things, but I know anecdotally people like Evan, people who've done things well with themselves by doing this cold exposure, warm exposure thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's a great thing. I think also, you know, in the whole idea of how do you help your blood without doing something crazy like Ibu, I think this is a great way to increase circulation and promote, mm-hmm, hey, I should be doing a bigger job. And your body says, oh, let's do a bigger job. So your body will adapt to the stress that you put it under. So give it some stressors so that it grows rather than shrinks.
I'll tell you the one thing that I've never done with it, and I was told that I would by several well-meaning drill sergeants. I was told, men, one day when you're not a soldier anymore and you go home, every once in a while, you're going to take an ice cold shower just to remember what it's like being in the field. You know what? There was a lot of things those men taught me that they were right on that one. They were wrong.
Oh, man,
I am 53 and I have never done that, and I have no plans to do it anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm with you. I make enough money, I can get some hot water.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't go back to that. Now, we'll go out and do these dumb epic adventure races and stuff, and it gets quite cold and all that. And I just do a lot to make sure that this guy stays a little bit warmer than most.
Yeah. Yeah, and now I will say, like, when I lived in an apartment when I was young and we had a gym and I'd go use the apartment gym to work out and I'd go to the pool, they had a hot tub, and it got pretty damn hot. And so the pool water wasn't cold, but it was much cooler. And we would do a lot of kind of like sit in the hot tub till you're sweating and you're kind of like, that's about all I can handle. And then into the pool. And when you first go into that pool, that water feels like it's a hell of a lot colder than it is. And there is something about it that is very stimulating to the body, I think, of that thermal extreme back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it causes pores to tighten and circulation to pick up.
Yeah, because of my aversion to the cold, I really haven't gone down that road much. Though my wife is big time into this, like basically everything that we do that's cool, that's alternative, she came up with. So she's big into the red light therapy.
Yeah.
And she has this really expensive mat that we put my son on through his stuff. And he even said, man, I feel like it's doing something. Now, I don't know, was it? I don't know. Most of it has never really worked for me, except for her patches. Nothing really that she does seems to grip on me. I'm just too much of an oddity.
Yeah. Yeah. What are maybe some other things people can do that, you know, they can't do in advanced therapy like Ibu? You know, garage gym ways to improve, you know, your blood health.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of stuff you can do, and this is a, a piece that is near and dear to me as I turn 50. Well, I'm 52 now, and my peers are all in their 50s. This is the drop dead years. This is where men work their asses off, and then they're like, hey, I'm going to – oh, I died. And they don't get to do anything. And so it seems like the thing that kills us is a blood thing that happens in our heart or a blood thing that happens in our brain. So if you could clean up your blood, does it clean you up? I don't know. I'm experimenting with that right now. But some of the easy things that they would all agree on is sleep. I mean, get 8 hours of sleep or whatever it is that you need. If you're falling asleep at a red light or a stop sign, you're in trouble. You got to stop doing that. So get some sleep. You need some good quality sleep. If you do, I mean, if you're like, what is that? Text me, call me, email me, whatever. Go to my website, crossfitgarage.com. My cell phone is actually on the, I know you shouldn't do that, but my cell phone's on the website. So you get me. If you call me, I'm not going to answer, but if you text me, I'll probably help you out. Don't send me a link or anything. I don't click on that stuff. The next is like, I've been experimenting with donating blood. I can't tell you if it's working yet, but here's my thought behind it. It doesn't cost anything. It's actually helpful to other people, and it forces your body to make blood. So your body is going to replace its blood. Ah, man, I forgot what it is. Like every 90 days, all the blood gets cycled out anyway. And that's why the A1C, it measures how much glucose is in there in 90 days. Cause that's like the, I think that's the rough average of your blood cell living. So when you give blood, in 2 days-ish, you get your plasma back, so your blood pressure kind of goes back to normal. In about 6 weeks, you've got all of your red blood cells. So this is hitting things like your VO2 max and your ability to perform and go out and do stuff. You get your blood – so if it's making the red blood cells, you would think that it would make them right unless you're broken somewhere else. And then about 12 weeks in, you get your iron back. This is why it's something like every 8 to 12 weeks, somewhere in there. I forgot the exact time. They will let you give blood, and they also do the iron test. They put your finger in their little device, and it says, hey, how much iron's in your blood? Because if you don't have enough, you can't give blood. So some dudes, especially if you're doing carnivore, get pretty high iron. So this is a way to kind of look at that. So I'm experimenting. In September 2026, I'll go back to get more blood work, and I'll tell you, hey, did it work? I don't know. Another easy way is hydration. Just make sure you're drinking enough. If you don't want to drink water and you're going to drink coffee, look, coffee's made with water, so it counts-ish, but keep drinking water. Put a little salt in your water, makes it easier to drink. And of course, I mean, we talk about this. I talk about this one all the time. It's your nutrition. I would up the density of the nutrition that you're getting out of your food. So if you're eating a Twinkie, there's nothing really in it. If you're eating, I guess, meat is going to be the most nutritionally dense. Your body can do less work to produce better results. And so if you've given blood and you're doing these things, it's going to use that theoretically to build something better. Does it work? I don't know. Right now it's free. I can go do it and help somebody. It takes, I don't know what, like a total of an hour to go somewhere, do the paperwork and, you know, give your blood to the vampires and then leave. So give it a shot. I don't know. It's something that I'm experimenting with. And in September, I will, get my blood work done again and let you know, after a year of giving blood almost every 8+ weeks, did it do anything? I think the answer is yes.
I don't know what it's going to do. Okay. And I don't know if it's going to be positive or negative, but I have a hard time believing it would do nothing, because the body is literally being forced to regenerate blood.
Right.
Right. There's no, and now the body does a pretty good job itself of, like, cells die and they're replaced anyway, but this would accelerate that. Right. I mean, what most people don't realize is your entire body, it's like something like it once every 6 months.
Right.
Like every cell in your body is literally replaced. It's either 6 months or 7 months or something like that. Somebody go ask ChatGPT. It probably knows.
Ask
ChatGPT and Gemini, and then average the two, and then you get a close to right answer, right?
So are you still the same person? It's Theseus's ship. If you replaced every cell, are you still Jack?
Yeah, yeah. Well, if we replicate every cell, which one's Jack? That's more interesting. That's a Star Trek thing, right?
Yeah. Jack Prime.
Who gets to stay and who has to go, right? Will and Bill Riker. Yeah. we're geeking a little bit. Anyway, let's talk about your fitness progression. It's move, exercise, train, sport, build someone who's hard to kill versus just like, you know, taking tracking steps. Like you have kind of this more lifestyle integration.
Yeah. And so this is where I think I probably differ than most people out there, man. If you're doing nothing, do something. I don't care. Something's better than nothing. Where I would start to challenge people is, okay, so you've habitually tracked your steps. That's just movement. I mean, man, not to be a dick, but hooray, you made 10,000 steps. Dude, anybody with feet can do that. Just go out and step. But I do appreciate that it's done, especially if you're coming from nowhere. But your body is not going to express a positive adaptation to steps. That's just basically us agreeing that, hey, no longer you're a lazy ass. You got off the couch and you did something. Again, not trying to take anything away. Start somewhere. I'm just saying it's not the end all. If somebody says, hey, I get 15,000 steps, you're like, well, you want to try something like the next thing? And they're like, no. So this is what I would say to you guys is do something. Step. That's perfect. Get a pedometer and count them. I love it. But then put some time frames on it. And maybe put a route to it, or maybe put some hills or some nature to it. So now all of a sudden you're exercising. I'm going up the hill a little bit quicker. So turn it from just walking into some sort of exercise. Exercise usually is some sort of movement or time bound thing. And so you're like, I'm going to go jog for 20 minutes. It's a little bit better. Your body's expressing something that it normally wouldn't do. And now it's having to push against that to grow a little bit. And this is probably the big changes. It doesn't stop there. This is where like my idea of CrossFit kind of comes in. You start training something. It's more fun. It's more interesting. There's a brain nervous system adaptation. How do you do a clean and jerk? I don't know. How do you do a pull up? I don't know. How do you run a little bit better? So this is where you have somebody watching like a coach helping you progress. If you could do the next step, which this is admittedly harder as I hit 52, I'm like, I don't know if I really want to do like true sports. Sport would be the pinnacle. If you could play sport every day, your body would adapt. It's kind of like what you were saying before. They want to compete. Play that sport. Your body is going to adapt in so many ways, not just physically, but the mental and the nervous system adaptations to make everything come together for the sport to work. Unless your sport's like curling. That I don't know. That's a weird sport.
That's not a real sport.
It's something.
It's something.
So I would say
it is a sport the way horseshoes is a sport. So if you call it darts is a sport, right?
If like, you can do it with a beer in one hand, it's not a sport. It's magic.
It's an activity.
Yeah.
So you know, the closest thing that like rides the line between sport and not sport, because it does require some modest physical exertion. But is it really a sport? Bowling.
Oh,
it's you got a 16-pound ball and you're whipping it, you know, a couple hundred feet. Like there is, but it's one thing over and over again, and it's not cardio at all, right? And it's not heavy enough to, but it's but you can do it with a beer. You just have to put the beer down, or they throw you out. I found that out like 30 years ago.
Yeah, so that's the idea is if you guys are out there and like, hey, what could I do next? The first thing is just move, but then move it to exercise. And once you're comfortable there, pick up something new or vary the exercise enough that you begin to train. I think in a little bit we're going to talk about some epic adventure, but that training gives your brain something else to do as well. So, yeah, I know there are people who are like, I just love to go jog for 3 hours, like Patrick from Knives. So it's like, I just want to go jog for 3 hours. I'm like, my ADHD brain can't do it. If you put somebody in front of me, sure, I can do it. I've been doing these really long trail runs, getting ready for some stuff and just finding out how bad my body doesn't like this. But when you have a train, something that you're doing new, it causes a higher degree of change, which is what we're going for. In positive adaptation. So rather than just go jogging, if you jog every day the same route, 5 miles in, I don't know, 45 minutes, eventually your body be like, yeah, I'm not really growing anymore. So you have to keep pushing. Otherwise, it just hits homeostasis. It finds its equilibrium and it just wants to sit there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen that happen in gyms, right? Oh, Tell me you haven't seen this. You walk into a gym and I mean, you can get a fucking workout on a Stairmaster.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, you can, right? Like, it's not the workout like a rowing machine will give you. Because if you want to, like, push your body to the limit, row to your limit, and you'll find it pretty quick. But it can be really tiresome. But see people, you walk in, you see somebody, a lot of times it's women you see this especially. They've got the headphones and they're watching TV. And they're doing something that probably was pretty strenuous. And if you'd never done it and you went and did it, it would knock your ass out. But they don't even sweat. And it's because they built up to that level to where they plateaued it. And they're not pushing themselves any further by increasing the speed, the resistance, whatever. And they've equalized. And I guess, like, I'm not putting that person down. It beats the shit out of the guy that's eating gummy worms on the couch. Right. But like, that's not going to actually improve their physical. It may help maintain it, but it's not going to improve it.
Right.
Because they've gotten to a point where they can do that without any effort. Now, if that's a warm up and then they're going to do circuit training or something, that's different. But I've seen people in gyms, like, that's their thing. It's like, bro, I would just like, you could buy a Stairmaster for way fucking less than a membership here, and that's all you do.
Yeah.
And I just, I don't know. Maybe, and again, I don't want to judge that person because maybe it is the fact that they have to go there.
Yes.
Makes them do it every day. And maybe that's all they want from it, and that's fine. But I also know, you talk to people in gyms and stuff sometimes. They're like, yeah, I'm trying to improve this or that. Like, if you're not challenging yourself, really challenging yourself at least a couple times a week, whatever that is, that doesn't mean you have to do what I do or do what Andy does. That just means you have to challenge yourself. Push yourself 1% more than you've been able to do in the past. That's the only way that your body will improve. That's the only way that your performance will improve. When I'm hitting the bag, man, that's like, if I'm not gassed at the end of it, I did it wrong. That's how I look at it. I did it wrong. I didn't put enough into it.
Well, and not every day you need to send it. So I like the idea of this constantly varied functional movements executed at high intensity sometimes, like today. It was a very loaded day. I wanted to make sure I was at my desk pre-eaten with my coffee in hand so that I wouldn't be late, which I was. Apologize. I do today? I just hopped on the bike that was downstairs. And I got on my earbuds and I was listening to an AI podcast telling my son, Evan, who's looking for, he's about to graduate. Like, look, computer science boy, here's some more AI stuff. Have you thought of that? And he's like, Dad, you're so behind the times. Yeah. But I think the other thing that I would add into this idea of movement, exercise, training, and sport is make sure you're measuring to the results that you want. So again, I was texting with Patrick, and I think it was Patrick. It might've been Ken. I don't know. I was texting with one of your expert counsels, and he said, I've been doing this thing. Oh, it was Patrick, because we're talking about running. I've been doing this thing and eating right and this and that, but I haven't lost any weight. I said, well, what are you trying to do? He said, I want to lose, or I want to shed some fat. I'm like, okay, so if you've gained muscle, that's going to counterbalance the fat that you've lost. So weight's not the best measurement. And he's like, oh, dang it, I knew that. Why did I do that?
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, in that case, you want a BMI, a body mass index, some sort of scale or something you can get on that'll test that. That's really measuring what you're actually after. So make sure that your key performance indicators are actually going for the performance you want.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I think, like, a lot of times simple things can be a hell of a workout if you do them right. And like, I can't do this anymore because I live in a place where it's mostly flat now. But like, I remember the one time I went up to my place in Arkansas before we were living there, when we had like a vacation place, and I had a friend of mine who had, he got divorced, and like 6 months later he lost a job. So he was in the Eeyore, right? He was in the Eeyore phase of life where he's all depressed and shit. So I'm like, we're gonna go drink some fucking whiskey, shoot some fucking guns, and hang out and do guy shit for a long weekend and fix your shit. So we're up there and he's still mopey and shit. And I'm like, okay, you need a fucking workout. So we're going to go do a fucking workout. He's like, oh, all right, what are we going to do? I'm like, we're going to take a walk up to the neighbors. He's like, how far is it? I'm like, a mile. He goes, that's it? I'm like, okay, fine. Let's go, bitch. So yeah. I didn't even push it hard. Like, all we did was just walk up there like a normal walking pace. But I'm about a quarter mile of it on the backside where you come up around the mountain. I tried it and you can't quite do it. But you can almost, when you're walking, touch the fucking ground because of how steep the backside of that was, right? Like, and so we get up to the like big, beautiful overlook, and he just goes, okay, I see what you did there. Like, and so when we lived up there, that was like our daily thing. Like, we might do other shit, but every day we just walked up to the neighbor's house, said hi, and walked back down. Right. And that was steep enough that when you were walking down, it was physically demanding because you had to control yourself. And this is what I love about walking. If you can get that type of environment to do it in, there's, and that's why when you do it, even if you normally hike a lot or whatever, but you go into those really steep situations, the next day you have those pains all over the fucking place. That's all those little micro spots where that muscle had to do work to control shit that you don't use.
Right.
You don't use that when you walk up a gentle grade of, 10% or whatever. But when you're walking up, 45 degree angles, yeah, you're using little spots. And to me, that is, I think the body likes to be challenged that way. And it's not necessarily always this. If you did it every day, eventually you adapt to it. So then you do something different.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And you don't need, like someone just said here, I don't need a gym membership. No, I don't think you do.
No.
I need it because
some people do.
Weirdly, as introverted as I normally want to be, I like to do stuff around people that don't talk to me.
Yeah.
I don't explain it. I don't know. That's just me. I like to have camaraderie in the suck. And that's just me.
I'll tell you when I needed a gym membership. When I worked a job, my commute was long. I was a father and my kid was like in eighth grade.
Yeah.
Because when you get home, you don't have anything to your, you don't have time to yourself.
Right.
And when you're getting up and you're leaving the house at 5 o'clock in the morning, you don't really have time to your, you can say work out in the morning. What, at 3? Right. At some point I have to sleep. Right.
Like, right.
So the fact that there was a gym involved, that meant on the way home, I could stop there.
Right.
And all of the things that got in the way weren't there.
Right.
As I matured in my life out of that, now, yes, I'll work out at home. Like, that's not a problem. I think it, and now we have like a little farm, and like this time of year, I don't have to think about exercise. There's so much.
You're gonna be doing a lot.
I need to think about exercise in June. Do you know why? Because if I can avoid working outside in June, I don't want to do it. It sucks out there. Last year I was out there, I swear to God, two hobbits came. They threw a ring in the backyard to get rid of it. That's how fucking hot it was, right? Like, I don't – so then I have to make myself do things early in the morning or late in the evening or in the house. Like, we have a gym upstairs, I don't think you've ever seen our setup upstairs.
No, I've been inside.
You know why? Because it's all shoved to the wall and there's like 10 mattresses laid on the floor up there for staff to sleep and shit. That's why.
Yeah.
But we do a lot. Actually, I'll tell you, one of the machines we have I really like, I know it's kind of gimmicky and all, but a total gym.
Oh, yeah.
Like the one Chuck Norris recommends where you're using basically body weight resistance on it. It's amazing the workout you can get on that machine.
He actually just worked out and the machine developed around him.
Okay. It was. He punched steel and it turned into a total.
Right.
But it's a good machine. And I'll give you guys a secret of how I got a super good deal on a brand new one. Okay. I don't know if this will work now because we bought this like pre-COVID. A lot of people were selling theirs. Like the one that is like an $1,800 machine. It's just one level below the ones they put in gyms like Andy's Gym. Right. And they sell them used, and people sell them used super cheap. Well, if you buy a used one, you don't buy a new one. So what the company did is they started selling them for like $750 as refurbished. There's no such thing as a fucking refurbished total gym. That's not a thing. Shipping it back and forth alone, it comes in a box and parts. They did that just to pollute the used market. And I knew immediately that's what it was because we used to do the same shit when I was in the computer testing industry. We would do these sales that were specifically when we would see the eBay, they called it the eBay factor, go too high on a certain unit. We'd put that unit on sale to quash that used market. So that can be used in a lot of places. That's just a bonus today. Let's keep going though. Let's talk about you like these epic adventures, man.
Hell yeah.
Races and challenges and events and stuff like that. Talk about that for a bit.
Sure. So, I'm speaking from a guy. Ladies, you probably need this too, but guys, don't lose purpose. Don't lose focus. Don't lose the goal. I think the Japanese word is misogi or something like that, but it's some sort of adventure that you can put yourself on that has the illusion of death, so don't die, but like, hey, it's complicated. It's tough, and it stresses you out in terms of physically, right? Maybe emotionally or mentally, but it just puts something also on the calendar that you can shoot for. So I want to do this race that I just found out about here in Georgia. It's called the TNGA. So it goes from South Carolina through some raunchy trails in Georgia over to South Carolina. That's my goal. So that's, I think, like the middle of August. So super hot. They couldn't pick the worst time, but let's do it.
And humid as shit there, too.
I mean, that's Georgia, right? Even the devil, when he came down here to get that soul, he's like, nah, dog. It's Johnny, you win.
Yeah.
So
that's what really happened.
Oh, yeah.
He just like, I got to get out of here.
the devil's rip was pretty good, actually. But so if you have this thing further out, then it's like any other goal you put out there. Now I can build off of that. So I've got this TNGA. It's a bike packing 370 miles. You have 10 days to complete it. Most people bail out. So I'm like, all right, I'm just going to try to plod along. The winners will finish in like 2 days or something. I won't win. I'm just going to try to complete. But now I can add in these other epic things. So I've been doing half marathon trail runs. Not something that I really enjoy doing. I could just go out and jog for 3 hours, but I hate it. But if I go with random people who, like, I met this guy, Harold, it was great. And we just talked as we tried to jog. And I learned about my body. My ankle around mile 8 hurts. I need to know that if I'm going to go do this other thing. My knee hurt around mile 8. All right, I need to know that. Again, I go back to my wife. She throws some patches on me. And she's like, go out and try it again. I'm like, oh, this is working. So it just gives you a future-casted event to look forward to. Sometimes us men suck at connection, and we suck at adventure, and we actually seek those things. So in our gym, I cheat. I mean, I get to kind of like mold who we are. And so I throw out a lot of, hey, who wants to do this random stupid thing with me? And every once in a while, I catch a big fish and they're like, all right, let's do it. So now I got people that I suffer with and that we're training together and we're doing these things, but it's creating accidentally or by purpose. It's creating connection with a common goal in mind. I mean, stealing from the military, take the hill, right? Hey guys, let's work together to do something kind of gnarly. I mean, again, no death on the line. I don't really want to die.
Yeah.
But I like the idea that it's tough. So I think as we hit, especially our 50s, if you do the timing right, your kids are kind of moving out. My last one, Evie, drives, so she doesn't really want to hang out. She wants to do her own thing. And so my wife and I are on our own. I'm like, hey, it's kind of empty nester before everybody's gone.
Yeah.
Who am I and what do I want to be and what do I want to do? Men, you get so much time back when everybody starts graduating. It's beautiful. I love it. I'm the most productive version of me I've ever been. So anyway, take some time. Try some stuff. You may hate it. Don't do it again. Try something else.
Yeah. I think you're on something here, and I'm about to go on a little bit of a soliloquy, and it's going to sound a little bit unrelated or even maybe a little morbid, but it'll make sense when I get back to it for everybody listening. So one thing we could, like, using extremes to try to win an argument is usually a fallacy, but using extremes to understand something is usually valid.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to talk about suicide for a second, and I'm going to talk about the kind of suicide that's not from a person that's mentally ill, the person you'd look at and go, I might not do it, but I get it. And that is, person who's dying of terminal cancer has 2 weeks to live. They're completely fucking miserable. Pain medication never works anymore. There's no way out of it. And tomorrow will be worse than today. And that is the commonality in most suicides, is a person, whether they're right or wrong about it, feels that I am completely, remember Office Space? Every morning I wake up, I realize this is the worst day of my life. Like, that is the thing, right?
Right.
And that's when you stop having something to be optimistic about. You stop having anything to look forward to. You can go all the way to the point of, fuck it, I don't want to be here anymore. And again, if I had 2 weeks to live and I know I'm going to do nothing but be miserable and shit myself for 2 weeks, and there's a bottle of pills there, I might do it. I can't say that I wouldn't. Hopefully I'll never have to face that choice. But I can't say what I would do until I'm at that point, so I'm not going to judge that person.
Right.
But if that's true at the extreme, then as we lose things to look forward to, it can't be good for our physical and mental and emotional health.
Right.
It can't be. If the extreme is death by your own choice, then to move too far toward that extreme to where it's bad can't be good. And one of the things about your events and all, it gives you something to look forward to. And I've found that, like, I think one of the reasons people that have a little bit more money live longer in retirement is less the medical care. Because poor people get all, especially once you're retired, you get all the medical care anyway, right? You get all the statins and you get all the high blood pressure medication. people that have some money tend to do things like take cruises and go on vacations and right. go visit their kids, and they stay active, but they don't just physically move around. They stay right. active from a standpoint of, I get to go do this, and then next year we're going to do this one, and then I'm going to go here, and I'm going to travel there. And I think that mental state, and I think when you start tying exercise to events, you're putting those two worlds together. So right. now I'm anticipating, I am going to go do this thing in August in Georgia because I'm fucking Andy and I'm fucking retarded. So that's what I'm going to go do, and do this in the heat. But what does that also mean? One, you have something to look forward to. But two, you're not going to just do what you would do anyway now, between now and August. Now you're going to start gearing up and training toward it. So that's, right. that's going to have a physical impact in improvement. But at the same time, you are increasing the anticipation of the thing.
That's it.
So that has a mental, emotional, spiritual component to it as well. And when we talk holistic health, I think people lose that whole emotional, spiritual thing that goes along with it. Whether I don't care if you're a diehard Christian or an atheist, you can still comprehend what I mean when I say spiritual there.
Yeah. Well, and yes, and I think the time frames that we expect aren't really the time frames that we meant. And what I mean by that is, I think the average age for us men to die is 72.
That's about right, yes.
So do I have 20 years left, or am I going above that? Now, weirdly, yep. going above that isn't very far. Like 85 is pretty far, so it's only like an extra 10 years. So it, like, these time frames are askewed. And if you get like my brother right now, he's an AI genie. There's some stories I can tell you what he's doing with AI, and he's working a lot, and he's 53. I'm like, buddy, got to take some time for yourself. So he's got vacations planned, so those are good things to look forward to. I look at it as, I want that adventure. I want that, I don't know why, I want the adversity. I like to see what I can produce. But also, I think there's good shared memories with the adversity. Like, you still tell stories that you could see on your face that you enjoy from back in the military days, even though it totally sucked. Sometimes suck fest is, I don't know, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, and you there's a big, very big difference between making an age and being healthy in an age. He said that, or I've read on him, and this guy I'm about to mention, and he has a lot of physical problems from all the things he did as an actor, where he did his own stunts and shit. But when you look at a dude like Sylvester Stallone and you see the shape that dude's in, and he's 70 freaking nine, right? There's a big difference between that 79 and the 79 I remember my grandfather at.
Yeah.
It's night and day. My grandfather had black. I mean, I'm not picking on my grandpa. He had black lung, right? Worked in the coal mines half of his life. Lived through the Great Depression of World War II. So you could do whatever you want after that, right? But right. when I look at, like, my grandfather would have been physically incapable of a day of Sylvester Stallone's life, apart from the physical, like the hard physical part of it, the working out and all. Just like as an actor, like running a schedule like that, my grandfather couldn't have done that at 79.
Right.
No way in hell. It's a side question. Like, have you noticed this? I feel like people today, and I cannot credit medicine with this, even though everybody wants to, because plenty of people like you and me, we see a doctor if, like, there's a yield sign in our spleen from a car accident. That's...
Right.
I don't remember my grandparents looking as good as I do at my age.
No, yeah. And Facebook feeds me all these pictures like, hey, this is the new 60. I'm like, oh, damn, yeah. She's 60? Because she looks good for me or whatever.
Yeah, I know there's some filters and shit and all, but just like when I'm walking around, as long as the person's not morbidly obese or something, right? Like, when I just look at people today and what they look like at 55 to 65 and think about when I was a kid. And I know when you're a kid, you're somewhat distorted, but then I can find pictures.
Right.
And I'm going, you look somebody up, you find out how old somebody is, right? Like an actor from like a TV series from you watch back when you were a kid, and you're like, well, how old is he? And they're like, well, he's 76. And you're like,
right.
That fucking can't be right. That dude's got to be like 90 if he's still kicking, right? And then you remember him in that show.
Yeah.
And you go look up the show and go, yeah, he looks like I thought he did. And you find out he was like 46 in that show, and you're like, bro, I'm 53. I'm going to be 54.
Perfect case is Ralph Macchio. Go pull up a picture of that guy. He's
that's making my point on the other side of it, right? Like, bro looks like he's 40 right now.
I know.
He's older than me. Maybe 30. Yeah. I think if you didn't know who he was and you were talking to him like on a Zoom call or whatever, and you said, bro, how old are you? And he said 38. You'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
And I think he is 56 or something.
He's older than that. He's been, really? he was like 28 when he did the movie as like a 16-year-old. So yeah.
I mean, he's been around forever because he was one of the characters in Outriders or whatever it was, the one with it was based on a book. He's 64, dude.
See? It looks good.
64. And I just don't think, and you can say, okay, that's the exceptional example, right? Or Tom Cruise.
He was the leader of this.
Maybe there's something to Scientology after all. I don't know. Or there was another dude that just came out when people heard how old he was. They're like, no, what? But I feel like in general, the general population, in spite of the fact that they're eating shittier food, I do believe that, is it maybe just less suffering? Like physical suffering? Like, because I can think of my uncles and grandparents and all, and they were hard men and women because they went through hard shit. But people just seem to live longer today a little bit, but they seem to look better.
Yeah, I think, at a guess, because I don't know, but I agree with you. I think there is a lot more normalcy back then to hard living. Like, well, how much do you drink? All the freaking time. What do you expect, right? Like,
that was my question.
Yeah, my grandfather, the coolest thing he had, he's like, look at this. It was a suitcase. When you tipped it and you opened it, it was like a martini station.
Yeah, I remember shit like that.
Yeah, you're like, so
you open the globe and it's a full bar set. Right. Yeah.
What is that? So they just, I think, except for the old lady who's like 107 and she's like, I smoke six packs a day and drink a fifth of liquor every day. You're like, okay, well, you don't make sense. But
yeah,
I don't know. I think they just lived harder. And, you know, there was no idea of like sleep is good for you. They're like, whatever, I'm just gonna get up and do this thing.
Well, sleep. I remember, my grandpa used to say back in my day, man laid down on the job for more than about 5 minutes. We figured he's dead and start throwing dirt on top of him, right? Like,
right.
And
I don't know exactly what it is.
Level of admiration, but I also look at it like, yeah, but that's probably not a good way to be living. And like some of the shit those guys did, if you look like in the military and some of the industries and stuff, the things that men did 50s, 60s, even into the 70s, like, I remember watching this one show about these guys like diving in these oil tanks and shit, or fuel tanks or some shit, to fix stuff. They would just keep their eyes closed and be down there for like 30 seconds under that shit. And then they come out and they just like hose them off with a fire hose or some shit. You know, no like actual remove, like that can't be good.
So it's probably, I mean, it can't be the glyphosate. Maybe that's helping us, but
I was just saying, maybe some of this bad shit's actually like, we're still dying, but it's like preservatives, right? Like we're embalming ourselves slowly over life.
And I'm going to hate to admit this. So I got one of our coaches, Jamie Thomas. She's a therapist by degree, but she coaches for us. And so she's right. Emotions matter. And I think that's probably a big thing that has changed, is even this guy talks about it. And I think they just never did. I mean, we bottled it up, shoved it down. We're like, yeah, we're good. I think there's a big piece of that. And that whole idea of how you think and connect, it's just like, I mean, how do I think and connect? So take a deep breath, let it go. I mean, my dad, he doesn't talk about Wim Hof breathing or any of that stuff. He's just like, you know, suck it up, buttercup. That's just what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. Where do you think sleep ranks in all this? Because we were kind of hitting on that there.
Yeah.
Compared to like diet, nutrition, sleep, like how does it fit in there? What is its importance relative to the other things?
Sure. I'll go quick on this one for you. But I think if I had to list how you eat, sleep, move, think, and connect, I think sleep is probably the most important. If you don't sleep, everything goes astray. They took some collegiate lacrosse players and said, hey, we're going to sleep deprive you guys for 7 days and let's see what happens. And they were like diabetic by the end of it, or, you know, fixable diabetic. So they were like super messed up just from sleep. So sleep is the primary tool. It's going to fix your hormones while you sleep. You're going to have some recovery while you sleep. It's just, and it's got to be good sleep. You want uninterrupted. So if you're getting up to pee at night, you got to fix that too. All of that. Dark place, get the sleep, let your body rework itself. I mean, we're rebooting, right? So I would say it's sleep first. Weirdly, I know I'm the gym guy, but I'm going to tell you it's food next and then movement. And actually, weirdly, connection is probably the most important as long as you have the other ones. So it's a weird place, but I would put sleep as number one. Guys, if you have trouble sleeping, talk to somebody. You know, listen to a podcast while you sleep or trying to go to sleep. Stop your head from spinning. Get a notepad and write things down. You need to make it routine. I go to bed at, I don't know, 10. I wake up at 6. The easiest fix I've ever found for the sleep issue is wake up at 5. Go to sleep whenever you want, but wake up at 5. Do that for 3 days. Your body will want to go to sleep.
Yeah. I think like another thing with sleep, like figure out what works for you.
Yeah.
Like I want darkness. When I say dark, I mean, I want dark. My wife would be like, just close your eyes. I'm like, I can still see light through my eyelids. Like I want dark and I want quiet. Right. And then there's some people, they actually like a little bit of like maybe some white noise or light music or something. What makes you sleep is what's important, I would say. And then the physical structure of the body. Like I'm a side sleeper, so I want my pillows to hold my head so my neck is straight. I don't want this and I don't want that, right? I want a nice, and if I don't do that, then when I wake up in the morning, I'm like, oh, that's why that's important, because that hurts. And I guess, you know, the other thing is like various forms of sleep apnea. You know, a lot of people are using CPAPs and stuff, and I've seen at least some people that have been able to replace that monstrosity with something as simple as like a mouthpiece, like Pure Sleep or something. Because what they really is they snore. So right. If you're snoring, the problem with that is you're not breathing well.
Right.
And you know, a $50 mouthpiece that's got no power to it will fix that problem. Not for everybody, but for some people. Like figure out the things that will give you a full, restful, nice sleep. What do you think about all the devices and everything, though? Because, like, the what the fuck are they called? Fitbits and shit, right?
Yeah.
I think that shit can go too far, especially with the person with the wrong mindset, where they start, like, it's when I start talking to people about, like, aquaponics, and they're like, take the water to the fish place and have them test it once a week. No, you chase shit. Like, you'll never fix it all. Like, I think maybe sometimes that type of technology can be, especially the person that's a little bit of a hypochondriac, like, they'd be better off without it.
Yeah. So I'm going to, this is a dangerous road for me. As an engineer and a dictator of life, I want everybody to wear the damn wearables and then give me the information and let me do something with it. Because I know that I want everyone to wear it, and a lot of times my natural instincts are incorrect.
Yeah.
I don't do any of it. I don't wear anything. I do track and I take notes. So I do pen and paper, but I do love it. If you're going to have a wearable and you're going to get that data, do something with the data. If you're just going to get the data and go like, oh, that was kind of neat, that's not good. Do something. If it says you have sleep, what do they call it? Sleep diversions or whatever events, do something about it. I think it's great. You don't know unless you know. And guess what? You're asleep when you're asleep. So you're not going to know. So yes, figure it out and then do something about it and then get off the things. I just don't like, I like to turn everything off. I want to sleep. If I could, I'd sleep in a Faraday bag to see if that would help. I don't want anything broadcasting on me. So I just,
I have a perfect way to detect if I'm snoring when I sleep. It's a finger that pokes me in the fucking back. Right. Like,
yes. So what we're finding as we get older, my wife and I went to sleep at different ways. Yeah. Like, oh, this is going to be problematic. We're growing differently in our older ages with how I need sleep. And so, it's a tough thing. So yes, I'm all in for the wearables. So I would tell you, don't do it because I want you to do it.
So we have kind of hit on this term, but you use this term drop dead years. You used that the last time you were here at one of my workshops. And it's usually, you know, men start declining specifically in their 50s.
Yeah.
What's actually happening? I know you've deep dived into this. What's actually happening inside the body of the aging 50-year-old male?
So I'll make it a quick one on this, but I think the summary of it is going to be, finally, the warranty is expiring on the 20 years of doing nothing or 30 years of doing nothing. So you played sport in high school, you went to college, you're like, oh, wow, this is kind of hard. I can't do it anymore. Probably pays more to get a degree than it does to be a pole vaulter. That doesn't pay anything.
Yeah.
So you spend 30 years doing the things that we should, taking on responsibility, you know, hey, no parents home. I got a key. I'm going to let myself in. I'm going to make some dinner, drink out of a hose. This is what I do. And then you're like, oh man, look at that. I'm 50. I mean, you know how this is, in a blink of an eye. It's
over. Yeah.
50 years later. Like, really? It's been 50 years. I don't feel like it's been 50. I feel like the same idiot back when I was 25. And so I think your body finally says, hey, I've adapted to this new lifestyle and it's not what you intended, but this is where we are. And it catches up to you. Mm. So I don't think it's hard to undo it. I'm sorry. I don't think it's complicated, but I think you need to work to undo that long nothing damage. The nothing caught up to you. The you know, never ending story. The nothing got you. So you need to watch out for that. I think the bigger problem though with people on like the retirement side is that they've lost that mission. So if you aren't starting to replace that in your 50s, I mean, what is it, like 50 or 60 or 70, somewhere in there, you're going to start wanting to retire.
Yeah.
You are not developing the other thing. Then the kind of the passion and the purpose goes away and you start to wax and wane. Like, why am I even, what's going on? Why do I even wake up?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there is some of that, like, especially like as people mature in their career and they kind of like, if you're not going to be the CEO and you're like a director or a VP or, you know, some higher level manager. And that's like, okay, that's your pinnacle. That's what you're going to do.
Right.
And maybe they'll let you do that till you're 65 or whatever. But when you're 58 and I got 7 years left, this is it. This is it.
Yeah.
And you're thinking retirement, well, you know, whatever it is for you, that's recreational, but you're not actually planning. You're back to that thing we were saying earlier about why the events and all, because you have something to look forward to.
Right.
It's just like, I got 7 more years of this. And it makes me think of my wife's favorite term when I'm watching football. When I occasionally watch football, she calls them football minutes. Right. So like what she means by that, she goes, how long's left in this game? I'm like, oh, not long, like 2.5 minutes. And she goes, 2.5 football minutes.
Right.
Because those 2.5 minutes drag. Right. And that, if you've ever actually been at a game instead of watching it at your house, even with all those timeouts and trying to manage the clock, it's still quick. When you're watching TV, it seems like, God, can we get this done already? Right. And I think that's, Now do that for 7 years in a dish chair.
Right. Yeah.
And I think there's like an internal rot going on there. And it may not be a physical rot, but it's like a spiritual rot.
Right.
Like my life doesn't really matter. If I don't come to work, nothing's going to fucking happen. They're going to promote that kid I yell at all the time. He'll do the job just as good as me. And this place will like, but I'm going to be here for another 7 years because I need money.
Yeah. No. And this is what I'm hearing from my buddies. Now, I don't hear this from all of them, but there is a simmering pot of, I just need to hang on for 7 more years and then my retirement fund is where it's at. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think there's this thing of, I just need to hold on. Like, man, that's not really an awesome life. You're just holding on. I mean, I get it. It's money and it's finances and you need that, but your work isn't you. Well, unless it's, you know, your work is you in a lot of cases. This whole survival podcast is an expression of you, right? This gym is an expression of me. And if they don't put something in there, which we get to 50 and things go weird. You got your kids moving out. Sometimes there's marital stress. Sometimes 50% of the time there's marital issues, right?
Yeah.
It's just a combination of things. And they're like, hey, I could just replace you with a kid out of college that knows AI and he can do your job better. You're like, I don't know. Can they? Maybe they can.
But. Yeah. 50s is when a lot of guys replace their wife with a redhead and a red convertible, you know, and that never works out well. That never works out well.
Yeah.
That's when your son comes home and he's like, your stepmom is now about more appropriate dating age for him than you. Like that does happen. Right. A lot of people make jokes about it in TV and movies and stuff, but they make jokes about things that are real. At least maybe they go more extreme, but yeah.
It's only funny because there's some truth to it.
Yeah. But I think there is some kind of midlife, they call it midlife crisis, but I don't know, if I was writing a book about it, I'd probably call it midlife rot.
Yeah. Oh,
that
yeah.
might be a good book for you to write. Avoiding midlife rot, because it's all these things that we're talking about, and it is the drop dead years. Like, for every dude that lives to be 90, there's another dude that has a heart attack at 57.
Yeah. Right.
And he didn't look bad.
No.
Right. When you have a guy that's 387 pounds, he has 14 chins, and he smokes every day, and he drinks every day, and he's always shoving food in his face, and he drops over at 58. You're like, well,
right.
Right. I know some of those guys that live like that, they live to be 90. But when one doesn't, you're like, I understand what happened.
Right.
When you see somebody that looks like, you know, a normal person, and they might even look good for 57, 58. Boom. Yeah. And sometimes it's a like a birth defect or something, that a hole or a prolapse, or I don't know, whatever the hell they call it.
Right.
Like, what's his name? Died of an aneurysm. Like, he died on a movie set, but they said if he was in the ER surrounded by heart surgeons, he still would have been dead. John Ritter. Right.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There's those freak things. But the person just had a good old fashioned heart attack and dies at 57. And you got to wonder what's up with that, because.
And people don't understand mathematically mean, median, and mode. Most people do not die at the mathematical average of 72.3 years.
No.
That's just the average. Yeah. The middle number isn't going to. It's
very few people actually die at that age. They die before it or after it.
Right.
That's how you get an average, right?
That's how you get it. And that's,
I don't know if I ever talked to you about this before, but this whole myth of longevity that we have now that we didn't used to have, it's based on that and zeros. That's what it's based on. So I did a thing. I was maybe doing this show for a few weeks, and I was already starting to talk about some of this kind of stuff, modern medicine and all. And I got a lot of pushback from my first, 15 listeners. And that was basically, we live longer. And I'm like, but do we?
Right.
So I went and I looked up every single person that signed the Declaration of Independence and how old they were when they died. And I put them into a spreadsheet. And so they were all males and they were all white guys. So I used the CDC numbers for average age of a white male in America today. They were rich or whatever. It didn't matter. All it meant is they had a house and food. You have a house and food. You have it better than they did. Relax, right?
Yeah. You know?
The average age of death for our founders that signed the Declaration of Independence was 72.1 years of age. At the time, according to the CDC, for white men in America, it was 72.8. We didn't gain a year.
So I see what you're saying.
And so everybody thought everybody died in their 40s back then. Nobody died in their 40s. No, but a lot of people died when they were one day old.
Right.
As they were being born, or between 2 years and 10 years from smallpox or what have you. And if you made it through that, you lived about the same as we live now.
Right.
And that changed a lot for me when I did that, because I kind of knew that. But when I actually looked at the number, I'm like, well, shit. Well, shit, we gained 0.6 of a year in 200 years, and all this shit and all this medicine and all this everything. Like, and it was because people just didn't die super young anymore.
Yeah.
That's all it was. And then we filtered out all the people that lived in dysentery or something like that. So people that had it, at least a decent home, clean water and food, lived to be 70 years old. And today they live to be about. But like you said, I think that's a really important thing. Almost nobody dies at 72.
Right.
People die at 84 and 56. And then that's your average, right? The median age of death is actually a much more interesting number. So median and average are not the same.
Right.
Median means half of people or more are above and half of people below or above below, right? So it is that center point, and that's not the same. It will drift by about 7 years on a human lifetime.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. This is all from my work I did during COVID to prove how we were being lied to. Anyway.
Can you say that word and not get banned?
You can say COVID. Now you can't say anything bad about the people that lied to us. how important is tribe, man? We talk about community all the time. And that tribe could be, people you play sports with. I think that's another reason, going to the gym might be for some people, because that's the one place they have like bros that they can hang out with and talk to, like having some level of community involvement. This is something we've lost a lot of. And I've never been a deeply religious person, but I also can acknowledge like some things have benefits. And one of the things I can say about like when I was growing up, since everybody went to church, everybody had community because of church.
Right.
As we have more and more isolated ourselves, we've isolated ourselves from community a great deal.
Right. I'm in 100%. You actually said this. I was like, I don't know why I like the podcast. You're like, because you're an introvert and you talk to yourself. I'm like, no, that's actually probably true. So it's tough, especially when you come out of like an engineering mindset. And I like people, but I don't like dumb people, which is tough. And or I don't like people doing stupid things, but you need community, and community is made up of everybody. So you have to get over yourself, talk to your therapist or whatever, and go out and find the people that are similar. I think at your fall workshop, I talked about the Venn diagram of my relationships. I like to overlap. I've got a post-it right here on my computer of the four guys that overlap me in these four different areas. I'm like, make sure you talk to them every week. They're your guys. That's the people that it should be the easiest to get along with. And I'm the oldest one of them. We shouldn't be friends because we're in the wrong phases of life. But I love these guys. And I got some more that I try to make sure I contact. But you find that community in the things that you like. I mean, this is a great example. You have a community. There is, I know Bruce is going to yell at me about Telegram. I'm never on it. But there's a huge group in there that talks to each other. There are people to get together for your events. Just, I've got people from your place that still text me about stuff. Build community with the people that you like. I know, like, and trust you. You know, like, and trust them. I can extend that, and you can create relationships better. So we do things like we'll go mountain biking. It's actually kind of funny. It didn't happen this way, but don't let facts interrupt a good story. So there's like five of us at the mountain biking trail, Blankets Creek, and we're just did one lap. We're standing on their bikes, huffing and puffing, and this guy pulls up, and he's like, hey, you guys have bikes? We're like, hey, you have a bike. He's like, do you want to go bike together? We're like, yeah, let's go bike together. And we just took off with this random dude and did another lap, and that's how guys – connect.
Did we just become best friends?
Yes.
I think so. You want to go do karate?
He's our groupie.
That's exactly where my head went, right?
That's it. And so find those people that then you can share community and story with. It doesn't have to be complicated. Just show up to a place. You know, I'm not saying pretend like you're going to, you're an alcoholic to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Be part of the real group. Like, actually care about whatever it is and show up. And then talk to people.
Yeah.
But the other thing is you have to be willing to go out on a limb first. Otherwise, the bridge isn't built. So you got to be okay saying, hey, I'm happy to show up. Like, I like this. There's a line in the book from He Who Fights with Monsters. I love this. Friends don't keep score. They just show up.
Yeah.
And that's my theme and my motto for this last half of the life is, man, I'm going to show up. When you need me, I'm there. I mean, you want me to get a knife and a hoodie? All right. I don't know what we're doing, but I'm in.
I deal with a lot of the same stuff because I call myself an introverted extrovert. And this is what I mean. Like many Gen Xers, I don't want to work with other people where people say, like, you're a person that like doesn't play well with others. Like, but there's a reason. I'm working. I'm trying to get shit done. Anything you do will only slow me down. Like, when I work with somebody else, it's only because they can do a thing I can't and it's important to what I'm doing. And it's only for that. I want to be front and center on my thing and work.
Right.
But I like to play around when other people are like, there's two sides to that, right? Like,
yeah.
So I don't want to be in a group environment to work on a presentation because I would be fucking done with it yesterday if I didn't have to deal with all you fucking people. I know that sounds arrogant. That's just a Gen X thing. That's how we are.
It
I don't want to say like, there might be the one thing we can collaborate on and get the fuck out of here and go to something else. Like, Gen X tends to be, especially dudes, they just quietly do their work and get shit done, and they don't want to be bothered. So they seem like this, like, stay away from me type. But that's, I've never really had close relationships at work.
Yeah.
I don't want them. Because if I have to fire you, I don't want to feel bad about it.
Yeah. Like, yeah, and I'm fixing that in my life right now. Some of the closest people I got are the guys and girls that I work with, and I love it. I'm closer to the guys because that just makes more sense. But, I mean... Yeah. So men, if you don't have anybody that you can call on to change a tire at 3 a.m., you need to find somebody. You need to find some group. You need to have some place where you can talk, you can relax, you can throw dirt balls at each other or pine cones. I mean, don't do that, but, you know, shoot BB guns at each other.
You can throw apples at each other with apple atlatls.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think that is something we're sorely lacking. And that's another way that people have misery in their old age. Like, especially if they were unmarried or they lose their partner, they're the second one to go, they end up having nothing in their life and they just kind of become shut-ins.
Right.
And I think our generation has a higher risk of that than any other generation, because all it is reverting to be a latchkey kid.
Right.
And there was like, at one point, there was something like 9 million latchkey kids at the same time in America. And it was all of us. Right.
Yeah.
You had your key and you went home and you were the only one there for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah. Oh, we hung out and did stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. We're still, you know, like, and like, if we wanted to do that with our friends, we couldn't FaceTime it. We had to go to their house.
True.
That was what got us out of our house, was going to our friend's house. And, you know, if somebody did have a stay at home mom, that was the last fucking house you went to. Unless it was snack time.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Then you blew in and blew out. But like, where you hung out was whoever's parents worked the latest. That's the house you hung out in because you could get away with everything.
Right.
But there is something that we were comfortable being alone. And I think that can be I think you need to learn to be comfortable being alone. But I think anything can go too far. Like, it's not good to be alone all the time.
Right.
I think even the Bible, like in the beginning, when God made it, Eve, he saw that it was not good for a man to be alone.
Right.
Right. I mean, like, that's about as ancient as literature gets. That concept is that old, that it is not good for somebody to be alone. And every society is built on kind of like that, you know, family, tribe, village, town, city, state. Like, that's just the hierarchy that humans have developed. And I think it's just because that's who we are. And I think maybe if we could stop short of the state, we might be a little better off. But that's neither here nor there, I guess.
Well, an easy one for you guys is go on Facebook and look for like the chicken group of your county. Just put in like I did, Cherokee chicken people. And it's there.
Yeah.
You guys will meet people that you're like, oh, I really like you. And I don't even know you. Yeah,
pick something you like to do and get your local community college CEU class catalog. Like, if you always wanted to be a better photographer, take a photography class.
Yeah.
Right. You know, just take something that's not real prone to wokeism or you're going to be miserable. You know, I mean, it's all like some of the community colleges around here, they did shit like kayaking courses. And then it was like, you know, so many days and they're like using the school's pool and shit. But then like the last thing they did was like go up to Arkansas and kayak one of the rivers in the Washita Forest or something like that. Anybody you meet on something like that, you're going to have something in common with. Right. You're not going to go to a kayaking class and meet people who hate kayaks.
Right.
Because they're not going to take that class. Right. Like or something like when I had Marjorie Wallcraft on years ago, and she was talking about building community. She said one of the things you can do if you want to build community, if you start basically putting out on Facebook, hey, I live in this area and I am a prepper and I'm getting ready and we want to make a big group so we can all like nobody's going to respond to that. Except the feds, because everybody else thinks you're a fed, right? But if you do something like you find out, well, what does it cost to rent the rec center at the library?
And watch Red Dawn.
Or run something like one of Jeff Lawton's permaculture DVDs.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah. That
would be
better.
Put out like next door and all, hey, we're doing a 2-hour viewing. You can learn all about how to grow food in your backyard with this thing called permaculture. There'll be snacks or whatever. And maybe you have $50-$60 into it. You know, but everybody that shows up is going to be somebody who's at least interested in that thing.
Right.
And more people will come because they feel safe because it's at a, you know, if you did it in your garage, like I don't know. He said he's got CrossFit in his garage, but this guy looks kind of pervy and he takes pictures of his feet. This could be a trap. But, you know, going to a rec center at a church or the city community center or something like that, people are more comfortable with that. They'll bring their kids. And then what she said is if you do something like this, you're going to find like half of those people you're never going to see again. You're not going to want them.
Right.
If you meet two or three every time you do that, then slowly you can build a group off of that. Because I do think one of the things I've seen people try to do is put these, you know, prepper, homesteader, whatever groups together, and you end up only with like the people that are crazier than you and pets.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all you end up with because if somebody comes to me and says, Jack, I know you do the survival class, I want you to be in our prepper group. No, bro. Go away, right. Fed boy. Like that's not, and I don't really want to do that either. But if you want to get together and talk about plant propagation or go to the gun range and put, you know, put together a skeet league or something. Go down to the gun club and talk to them or the gun range or whatever, where they have a sporting clay range, and say, do you have a team? Like, do you have any kind of like competition thing going on? No. Do you like money? Because I find that always gets an entrepreneur's attention. Like, do you like money? You do? You don't hate money? No. Okay. So, you know, if there was a league, there'd be more people shooting here. Isn't that your goal? Yeah. Could we work together on that?
There you go.
Now they're your marketing and you're their marketing. And now you're putting together a group of guys that are all gun enthusiasts. Right? Like, there's a thousand ways to do that, but I think that you need something.
You need something.
Something.
Actually, I'll toss it out here. Guys, if you're local to Woodstock and you're listening to this, or Cherokee County and you're listening to this in Georgia, let's go to Garland Mountain and do some sporting clays. I'm in. I love that. I'm really bad.
So I thought you were going to say come across the garage, but.
What's that?
I thought you were going to say come to CrossFit Garage.
Yeah, but. Oh, yeah, that too. Oh, man, that was a perfect opportunity.
Don't hate money.
Infomercial, yeah. I'd rather go shooting. I love sporting clays. I suck at it, but I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just put something together and see who shows up. And if no one shows up, then break some clays and go home and try something else. Right. You have my business partner, Neil, and I used to like, we would try to get our salespeople more charged up. And finally we would get pissed. And we'd say, I have nothing to lose. So just not do it. Right. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, pick the phone up, call that person, see what you can get going. Right. Yeah. Like, I think there's something that you want to let, you know, like CrossFit Garage and some other things, like some resources you have where people can learn more about you and whatnot. Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. Here's the infomercial. If you're in Woodstock, yeah, come see us. If you're not in Woodstock, you're like, hey, I'd like to have a gym that doesn't suck. Dude, email me and I will non-creepily help figure out where you live so that you can find a gym that'll meet your needs. So andy@crossfitgarage.com. I know that's super weird. You can email Jack and he'll get it over to me. Although you could just email me. I will, for any of you guys out there, well, unless a billion or 200,000 of you say yes to this, free resources, go to my website, crossfitgarage.com/free. There's a bunch of stuff that actually I did for y'all as I did the expert council thing. You can find all sorts of free stuff, workouts and so forth. I will also help you for free. If you log your food for 2 weeks, I'll help you for an hour for free. Basically, though, here's the thing. When you log your food for 2 weeks, you're going to see the dumb stuff you do, and you won't need me. If you need help, you know, like, and trust Jack. He extends that to me. I extend that to my coaches. Hire one of my coaches. They are not going to charge you $1,000 an hour like I will. So I got Coach Jamie. She's got Fox Oak Counseling. She's a therapist. She's awesome. Jennifer with Inked Barbell. Josiah, he does a lot of cool stuff, especially dudes. If you suck at fashion, he will help you there. Coach Matt, he's like 6'9". So if you've got a basketball kid and he's not doing well, or she's not doing well, this guy is going to rock you. If you're interested in those patches that my wife is into, let me know. I'll hook you up. Guys, I want you to succeed. If you want to know what my brother and my son are doing on AI, my brother is the Wizard of Oz. And my son is Mufasa. He's about to kill the lion. He's going to crush it in AI. I'll tell you what they're up to and what the world is doing. So I do have a podcast, Fitness, Food, and Finance. You can listen to that sort of stuff there. On YouTube, it's just @AndyMcCann42, because back in 2008, I didn't know what I was naming, and I just named it after me. And then, of course, 42 is the answer to life, the universe, and everything. So, yeah. I'm here for you. Community. I love this community. I love showing up. I love doing the stuff. And man, who doesn't like people who are self-reliant? This is awesome.
Well, right now I've got up a thing that says last call for questions on a little marquee. And I'm just going to share with you guys why. So I typed a bunch of different versions of last call for questions in, and YouTube blocked every one of them as potential spam, even though I own the channel. They blacked last call for questions, last call to ask questions, last chance to ask questions, one more call for questions. If you have questions, post them now. And questions, let us know, last chance at it. All of those were blocked and flagged as dangerous by the geniuses that run YouTube. See why I don't? This is part of why we have trust issues, Andy. You know. I think Gen X, we have a lot of trust issues. They told us shit like, if we turn the light on in the car, the cops were going to take us to jail, right? The dome light, and you know, when the ice cream truck rang the bell, it meant they were out of ice cream. Yeah, we have trust issues, right? Anyway, let's take some questions. Anyway, if you do have a question, get it in quick because this will be the last call. I got three here, and one's not even for Andy. Question for me, Jack, how do I find your store where the grow lights that you recommend are and you get credit? That would be tspaz.com. We'll talk about that more in just a bit. But if you want to find any of my product recommendations, you just go to tspaz.com. It just redirects to a page on my website and you can, you know, do your shopping starting from there. But just a little bit down, there's all the categories. And so with lights, you would click on lighting, right? And you click on lights, and then you would be able to find that. And all the stuff I've reviewed over the years is always on that page. So since you asked, I'll give you an answer to it. Next question is from Ace. He says, I'm fit and in my 60s. I do push-ups and do 25 PD free weights twice a day. Problem is eating enough protein. Goal is a firm chest and a six pack. Tips.
Okay. So, if your goal is a six pack, it's all in what you eat. Everyone's got muscles underneath that stuff, but you have to convince your body to, one, that there's no famine and it's okay to burn that fat. So sometimes, I know this is going to sound bad, you're like, hey, what are my calorie count at? Most guys should be somewhere in the 2400s. If you drop too far down in your calories, your body starts shutting things off. So it may be a scenario where you might need to eat more. I don't know. You said your protein count. Well, that's not really going to be abs in your stomach. It's going to be the weight, right? You need to work on weight. So it's a kind of a shredding thing. Chest. I mean, obviously, you're going to go with some basic push-ups. You can do probably deficit. If you got dumbbells, put them on the ground and do a deficit push-up. The wider your arms, your elbows go, the more chest you're impacting, the more narrow your elbows go, the more tricep you're hitting. So go wide and deficit, and that should help out some.
And I don't know how you'd feel about this. I'd say that if you want to work on your chest, like a lot of guys do a lot of bench pressing.
Yeah.
Incline and decline as well.
Oh, yeah. Well,
if you're not changing the part of the pec, that you're working the same part of the pec along with the triceps and everything else on a flat bench. And a lot of people do flat and incline. I see very few people do decline. And it's, I get it because it feels kind of weird.
Yeah.
The first, like, it's not the upside down thing. It's just when you push that bar and you're pushing it, like, it's just weird. Like, you're pushing it, like, towards the ground, but it's going up. I don't know. Like, it's weird, but it works a totally different part of the chest muscle. I have found that one. You'll like this. I need to find the pictures next time you're here. When I was 19 in the Army and we were in Honduras, we didn't have a gym. So me and my buddy, this guy named Timberlake, we built our own weight bench and weights.
We made
our plates by taking a garbage can, like a little metal garbage can, and we put it on one inch steel plate, and we drew a circle with chalk, and we cut it out with a torch, and we cut a hole in the middle. It was mostly balanced. And then we turned the can over to the bottom side to make smaller plates. So we made our plates out of that. And then we took a bar that was about the right diameter. We put a piece of smaller bar inside it, welded the end shut, and we welded two giant nuts on for collars. And then we took scrap plywood, and we built a bench. And that bench did incline, decline, and flat. And we even built a bar holder for it. But you needed someone to help you with it because it went like back like this into the wood, right? But it worked. And we were able to work out there. So that's just a fun story. And let's take away anybody's bullshit excuse about why they can't work out.
You can get creative on this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. We also set up pull-up bars. And because the dirt was like talc powder, even putting the 4x4s down in the ground like 2 feet, they wobbled. So we had to put all these stabilizers on them, and we ended up turning one of them. We had like a 45 degree angle going down to the ground, and then two from each other side coming up, and it was perfect. We put a cross member there, and then you could lay on that with your feet locked into the two side ones and do like 45 degree angle upward sit-ups. And so you work out more when you're bored, I guess.
That's true.
Bruce, you know, Bruce, Bruce says, what about mobility and being able to crawl around on the floor and get up off the floor? That's actually really important.
Yeah. That's one of the tests we did, back at your workshop. So can you sit on the floor and stand up without any help? So
yeah,
yes. And these are the things, like, I got a buddy in, we were talking about getting off the floor is just tough. I'm like, well, it's not going to get any easier. So the exercise that I would recommend is just do one burpee. And then when one, it seems like, okay, I can do that, go to two,
go to two.
So super important to reclaim and keep the stuff that you have so that you can stay independent.
And I think this would be late in the game to start if you're 50 or 60 years old now, though anybody can do anything at any time if they really want to. But I think one of the things that would help people when they're young, if they were looking ahead, is take martial arts.
Oh,
you're going to learn how to get off the fucking ground. Right.
Yeah.
And there's ways to do it. Like, I can, even at my age, I can still get up off the ground without my hands from my flat back. But if I didn't know how to do that.
Right.
Even when I was 30, I wouldn't have been able to do it at 30 if I didn't know how to do that. Right?
Sometimes, like, it's a circus trick. You got to know if you know the trick, you're in.
Well, you basically, it's like a hurdler stretch with your foot underneath, and when you rock forward, that leg is there and you come off the side of the foot and you can come straight up. And, like, if you practice that, you'll be able to do it. But what do you say, Andy? If you don't do a thing long enough, your body's like, I guess we don't do that anymore. So if you occasionally get down on the floor and get up, then your body's like, I guess I don't need to do that anymore. And I think, like, my wife would always talk about how the guy she was married to first, her mother-in-law versus her mother, and how both of those women were as they aged. And her first husband's mom, the mother-in-law, was, her doctor always told her, take it easy, take it easy, take it easy. And her mom, it was always, if I quit, I'm done.
Right.
And one aged much better than the other.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you that Dorothy's mom, she got hit with liver cancer. And that's just liver and pancreatic. And that's just a death sentence. Had that not happened, she might still be around. She'd be damn near 100. And she was incredibly good shape. For someone that she didn't do yoga, she didn't work out, you know, she had a glass of wine three or four times a week, but she never quit. She never quit moving. She never quit doing anything. She was deeply involved in the church. Like, she had things in her life and she wasn't overweight. And, but the big difference between the two of them was, one was, when I don't feel good, I'm going to lay down. And the other was, when I don't feel good, I'm going to move.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to be said for that simple little piece of wisdom right there. So, Andy, how can people learn more? You want to add anything else to what you've already said as to, like,
if you love the tangential wording of the story, Fitness, Food, and Finance is the podcast. If you love my lovely face, you can get on. I have nothing to sell you guys. I literally just do this because I want you to live. So, no, there's no infomercial for the thing. There's no Bitcoin to be bought. There's no. So. Yeah. It's just, I want you to be healthy. And if you've got questions, ask ChatGPT or ask me. I'm happy to help.
All right, man. Well, hey, thanks for being with us today.
Yes, sir. Take care, guys.
All right, guys, real quick, as we round things off before I sign off and say goodbye to you myself here. First and foremost, if you like this show, if you like this kind of content and you want to build a better life, this book that I have here will not teach you to eat better, though it'll talk about it a little bit. And it won't talk about working out and all the stuff we were talking about today, but it'll talk about how to design your life. The book's called Laws of Life, Ditch the System, Design Your Life. I am the author, Jack Spirko. You can find it at Amazon. Do consider picking up a copy. And if you're like, well, I wish you know, my kid who's like 15 or 20 would listen to these guys and learn how to put his shit together in life. A lot of times they won't listen, but if you give them a book, sometimes it'll sit around long enough and they'll read it. So it's very much in tune with what many young People need to hear, and especially I would say young men. Next up today, though, is my item of the day. We did have a question today about how to find the things I recommend, and of course that's at tspaz.com. I have a product for you today that is going to be like, either you like can see a place you need this and you're like, wow, that's a really great product, or you're gonna be like, I don't care. Not everything can be a home run for everybody. But this is a company called Temp Pro, and it's their TP50 digital hydrometer and thermometer. And it does what it says. It tells you the relative humidity in a space, and it tells you the temperature in a space. But wait, there's more. It also keeps a record of what was the lowest humidity and highest humidity and lowest temperature and highest humidity. And here's the thing. Since the last reset to zero it out. So this thing could not be simpler to use. A lot of times when people see a sensor device like this, they think like you got a computer program or something. It doesn't do anything special. It's got one button only. And if you push the button once, it changes between centigrade and Fahrenheit. That's it. If you hold the button down, that memory I just talked about is reset. So if you wanted to know every morning what the highest and lowest temperature in an area and highest and lowest humidity in an area was, you'd reset it, let's say, 8 o'clock in the morning every morning. And then that morning when you came in, you record those numbers somehow and then reset it again. Or you could do it by the week or however long you want, which is really a great way to do it. I got this because I needed something in my garage because I have this brand new plant starting system. And I'm starting to do videos on the system itself. And so today I did a video on that system. Like, why don't you actually write up the little sensor as well? I built a really cool thing you guys might want to check out. I took a 55-gallon fish tank that is heated, and I built a kind of makeshift greenhouse around it. And then I also have a shelf system with plant lights, like the person asked about earlier, where I'm starting all my seeds. And they're all in the common little greenhouse thing together. And that means while that's closed up, that warm water in that heated 55-gallon fish tank evaporates into there. It raises the humidity and, of course, keeps the temperature more stable. And so it's a really cool application of this tool, but there's a lot of other applications for this. Again, this is not something that plugs into a network. This is not something that does any of that stuff. It's very, very simplistic. But here's the deal. Super cheap. Three of them for $28. Which for my project was perfect because I put one in the main area right over the fish tank, one in the area that is on the plant shelf, and then one outside of that system so I could see a control versus reality. And it showed me things like the temperature is on average about 10 to 20 degrees higher inside the system, and the humidity is about 15 to 25% higher most of the time inside the system. So it told me that it's actually doing what I built it to do and how well it's doing that. And so that's one application. But again, it's by a company called Temp Pro. You get a 3-pack of these for $28. And if you're thinking, but you know, I wouldn't mind having one of those. I don't need three of them. You can buy one. One's $10. So they're a little bit cheaper if you buy a 3-pack. It's also one of those weird items. I'm just going to point this out and because it's something you need to know. In a lot of situations, it is one of those products that is not always a discount to buy a multi-pack. The 3-pack is a discount over the one. If you buy two of them, they cost about $11 a piece. So I'm just telling you that for general information. Whenever you're buying stuff like on Amazon and whatever, don't assume because I need 10 of them. If I buy the 10-pack, I'm going to get the best price per unit. If you care about things like that, just take a look. Sometimes quantity 10-1 doesn't make any sense, but sometimes it costs less. Sometimes that's because items are on sale and what have you. Anyway, John Dowie says he uses these exact ones. Huh, that's interesting. Around his grow room. For those who don't know John, he is a guy that grows microgreens. And so knowing that information is actually really important to his work, especially with some of them, because some of them, when it gets too humid, you get all kinds of problems. And one little tray of microgreens might be several hundred dollars worth of product. I used to joke with John when he started up, telling him, it sounds like you sell drugs, man. It really does. You talk about by the gram and shit like that. Anyway, appreciate everybody tuning in today. We have made it through another week of our live stream shows. We do three of those a week. And Thursdays, we do an expert counsel Q&A show. I believe tomorrow you'll get an answer from Andy among some other members of the council and a standalone for me. But because of the way I do that show, cobbling it together, I do not do a live stream for it because you guys send me questions. I send them to the council. They send me a recording. It's just way easier to make that one audio only and put it out on all the podcast services. Thanks for tuning in today. And hey, if you want all of the resources Andy talked about, if you want to learn anything more about this show and the work that we do and what have you, and you're watching this video, right down in the video notes, in the first little paragraph, there's a link. It'll go over to my website. It'll go to the page for this episode. If we're still live and you click it right now, this minute, while we're live, it won't work because we're not quite done yet. About 30 minutes after the live ends, that page will come up, and I have links to everything that Andy talked about, his business site, his personal and his business Instagram, as well as same with Facebook, his free resources page. All that stuff is there. All I got to do is click a link. I don't even think he makes you fill out a form to get it, so get on over there and get those resources. Take care, guys. I will catch you tomorrow.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have